Well,
it will all come out in the wash on Friday morning. Of course, we'll be running a special show here at Talk Radio from College Green outside Westminster. Adam Bienkow, thanks for joining us. UK political editor of Business Insider. Thank you so much for keeping abreast of the political news today. Delighted now in my last minute to be joined by Tommy Boyd, who's here from 1 o'clock. What have you done with John Holmes?
I don't know. I think reports of his death are greatly exaggerated, but apart from that, I hope he's enjoying himself and recharging his batteries. I don't know about you, I find myself quite heavy-hearted. I'm not going to sound like it, but I do, because people like me who've been in radio journalism for about 50 years have been covering this sort of thing, awful, as each of them are, for so long, and you just wonder if it's ever going to go away or whether it's going to be just mankind's eternal problem, terrorism.
Indeed, I have to say, I'm with you in terms of a heavy heart today. I feel quite I would love to be part of the whole peace and unity and love thing. I just can't get there. I just can't get there. Thank you very much. Tommy Boyd is going to be here after 1 o'clock, but I promise you it's going to be much more fun than that, because you will make it so. I'll be back at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning here at Talk Radio. Thank you.
How are we going to make the whole nation rise, agitate, educate, organise? Join the conversation party.
Well, I can't add anything to that, Colin.
Election 2017 on Talk Radio.
Man, that Hypnos bed is comfortable. Time to get up, work to do. Shower, tick. Shave, tick. Dressed, next question. Time for all-you-can-eat brekkie with the fellas. Bacon, sausages and more bacon. Probably even some beans. Today is a big day, because you are scaffolders. Whatever your story, this is a great place to start. Premier Inn, Premier You.
Breakfast prices and options may vary. Exclude certain locations.
This June, if you test drive the Qashqai, Juke or X-Trail, Nissan will give you an extra £650 off. That's up to a massive £2,900 on a Qashqai at only 4.99% APR representative. Yes, Nissan will give you money off, just for test driving our best-selling crossover range. I know it sounds unlikely, but that's what it says here in this script. I haven't read it wrong. I'm a properly trained actor. I've done Shakespeare, a telly, and hundreds of voiceovers. Search Nissan offers if you don't believe me. Nissan. Innovation that excites. Nissan Finance. 4.99%. 9% APR representative. Offer excludes Vizier grade. Subject to status over 18s. Order and register before the 2nd of July from participating dealers only. T's and C's at nissan.co.uk.
Tradesmen, here's the plan. Get to the rendezvous. Your contact the foreman will show you the ropes and the tools. Get in, do your job, and get out. You'll be sipping margaritas on the beach before you know it. But first, prove you're a guy they can trust. Show them your direct line public liability policy, which has been conveniently wired to your phone. And tell them you're with the Wolf. Let's get to work.
Get instant confirmation of your cover sent straight to your smartphone. Can your insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Fill up with BP Ultimate and get 10 times more per tank. 10 times more per tank. And even 10 times more per tank. Fill up with BP Ultimate and collect 10 times Nectar points to put towards everything from shopping to holidays. Offer ends today. BP, green lights all the way.
T's and C's apply. See in-store or bp.com for details.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A radio star is born.
You're going to love
Talk Radio. Talk Radio.
It's 1 o'clock. Let's get the very latest news from Victoria Bourne.
Thanks, Tommy. Coming up, London, attackers identified and politicians focus on policing after attack.
Talk Radio.
Jeremy Corbyn has back calls for Theresa May to resign as Prime Minister in the wake of the London attack. The Labour leader has hit out at her for presiding over cuts of 20,000 police officers while in the role of Home Secretary. But the PM has defended her record on policing.
We have protected counter-terrorism policing budgets. We have also provided funding for an increase in the number of armed police officers. Since 2015, we have protected overall police budgets, and that's despite the fact that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party in the House of Commons suggested that police budgets could be cut.
Meanwhile, Theresa May says Donald Trump was wrong to criticise the Mayor of London for telling Londoners they had no reason to be alarmed after the attack killed 7 people on Saturday. In the last few minutes, Sadiq Khan has condemned the actions of the terrorists.
I'm angry and furious that these 3 men are seeking to justify their actions by using the faith that I belong to justify their actions. The ideology they follow is perverse, it is poisonous, and there is no place in Islam.
Police say they know the identity of all three attackers. Irish police say they're assisting officers in London after an ID card found on one of them confirmed he lived in the Republic. The UK threat level remains at severe, meaning another attack is highly likely. Brian Salcedo was in a pub near London Bridge on Saturday night. He offered to help a policeman who was treating someone on the road.
I was like, "Officer, do you need anything?" He was like, "Mate, this area is unsafe. Get out of it." I was like, "There's more bodies than police officers." He was like, "If you're going to stay, you're staying at your own risk." And I was like, "Okay, I don't care. What do you need?" And he was like, "Okay, if you see anything suspicious, let me know."
Well, there have been more raids in East London. 11 people remain in custody. And Liam Gallagher has criticised his brother for not performing at the Manchester One Love tribute concert. The Oasis star claims Noel has shown his true colours by not being at the event for victims of the arena attack last month.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A wet afternoon for many with rain spreading eastwards, highs of 19 degrees.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Ben Fletcher. Good afternoon. Chelsea winger Eden Hazard is understood to be having an operation on his fractured ankle today. The Belgians returned to London from the national side's training camp where he picked up the injury. It's thought he could be out for around 2 months, meaning he could miss the start of the new Premier League season. Real Madrid have been heavily linked with him, with Hazard telling Belgian media it would be hard to turn down the Spanish giants. Chelsea legend Ray Wilkins told TalkSport the champions simply have to keep him at Stamford Bridge.
They're a winning club now, and they win often. But if they want to progress and be one of the top clubs in European football, you cannot afford to be letting Eden Hazard move to one of your biggest rivals.
Tennis world number one Andy Murray's on court at the French Open. He leads Russian Karen Khachanov by a set to love in the last 16 at Roland Garros. Finally, cricket and weather permitting, Australia face Bangladesh in the Champions Trophy. It's TalkSport 2's live commentary game from the Oval. That's the latest sports news powered by TalkSport.
Talk Radio.
Daddy, can you read me a bedtime story?
Yes, my little princess. Once upon a time, there was a daddy bear and a mummy bear who had just sold their house in the woods, and they were very, very happy. But then Goldilocks told them if they'd used purple bricks, they would have had a proper estate agent without paying any commission. Now Mummy Bear keeps growling at me because apparently it's my fault. The end.
But that's a sad story, Daddy.
Yes, dear. Nightmare.
Save yourself from commissary at purplebricks.co.uk.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Yeah, if it's okay with you listening, I'm not going to do any bum de liga ola boo this afternoon. We don't have a bedside radio, I've just noticed. I should have noticed it a long time ago. We don't have a bedside radio anymore. God, for years I would wake up and just the first thing I would do is click the bedside radio. That's how I found out that John Lennon, for example, you know, news that happens overnight, you collect from your bedside radio. Generally, although the broadcaster who told, I was living in London about John Lennon's murder was a guy who's no longer with us called Mike Smith. I must have been tuned to Capital Radio. And what he did was he said, how sad it is this morning to have such terrible news. And I'll remind you what it is after this one from Madness. And so I had to listen for 3 minutes wondering, what? And then it came through. Presenting, broadcasting, disseminating information that is going to upset people is such a privileged position to be in that you have to cherish it, nurture it, and make sure that you carry out your responsibilities responsibly, which is what we're going to do this afternoon. Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes. So instead, I went downstairs on the Sunday morning and put the kettle on. It was about 6:30 a.m. and flipped open my laptop. And now I'm becoming trepidatious about going to the internet for my early morning fix of what's happened overnight. Because first Manchester, I discovered that way. And then London Bridge, I also discovered that way. The way in which these pieces of information arrive into our heads is is very significant. You can find yourself drawn to every morsel of news coverage because you want more information, you want more reassurance, you want to know as much as you possibly can about what's going on. And trust me, if any developments occur at all between now 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock, any press conferences, any news, we will make sure that you get it first. And in keeping with that promise, Sadiq Khan spoke to the Mayor of London, of course, spoke to the press earlier, and this is what he had to say.
It is sad that officers have been injured very seriously in the attack on Saturday night. That's as a consequence of them running towards danger, encouraging others to flee and risking their lives in the process. And can I just say this? The acts of these three men on Saturday night was cowardly, was evil. And I'm angry and furious that these three men are seeking to justify their actions by using the faith that I belong to justify their actions. The ideology they follow is perverse, it is poisonous, and it has no place in Islam. And I condemn this terrorist act, but also the poisonous ideology these men and others follow. Many, many people have been in touch to say, how can we remember those who've lost their lives? How can we pay tribute to all those affected by the incident on Saturday? How can we show the world that we as a city won't be defeated by this terrorism? And so as a result, we'll be holding a vigil very near to this scene, down the road in Pottersfield Park at 6 p.m. tonight. We'll be remembering the victims, their families, saying thank you to the police and emergency services, and demonstrating that London won't be cowed by terrorism, nor will we allow these terrorists to fuel division and divide our communities.
Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who, if memory serves me correctly, attracted a cynical tweet from the President of the United States shortly after news of the London Bridge attack began to get out there. We all have flashbulb memories of the moments when we discover, usually by broadcast news, of something terrible happening. And of course, the great one for those old enough to remember it is where they were, who they were with. They can probably remember what they were wearing and the colour of the wallpaper on the wall when they discovered that the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, had been assassinated. But each of the shocking news stories that come our way, tragically, eat a piece of us away. And one memory that stays in my mind of the 2 or 3 hours after I discovered about London Bridge, I'd be interested to take anybody else's reflections on how it affected them. We assume that we are shocked and horrified and that we have concerns, huge concerns, for the families and friends of those who are in hospital and those who were lost and the survivors who may not have been cut but will be scarred for life, let's remember, promise you, nevertheless. And one of the flashbulb memories that I have is I tuned in the living room on television to Fox News. I tend to go round the different organisations delivering news when something like this has happened. So I suspect that's kind of normal. You start clicking away, fiddling with the dial. I don't know why. Are you hoping that... Well, I guess you're hoping that one news organisation is slightly ahead of the other and that the piece of information you want next is going to be somewhere else on the dial. But I heard this. On Fox News, they were interviewing a politician from Texas, and I can't remember his name or even how he is a politician, whether he was a senator, a congressman or governor of Texas. But he simply said this: if this had happened in Texas, they wouldn't have got very far. And whatever you think about gun control, that is true. 0344 499 1000. Calls, of course, at your standard rate. With these attacks becoming apparently more frequent, let's speak to Phil Campion, a former SAS trooper and security consultant. Good afternoon, Phil.
How are you? All right, buddy?
Yeah, I've been better, I guess, with all of this.
Yeah. Whereabouts
are you, without giving your grid reference, where are you at this minute in time?
I'm in London.
Yeah. Are you in, you know, like central London?
I've been at the town today. I'm slightly off central. I won't give you my exact location, but I'm slightly off central
As a human being, rather than, you know, somebody who is well versed in the technicalities and considerations of security at the highest level, does it change the way you think and feel when you're moving around a place which could be a target, such as a central metropolitan area?
I, for a very long time in London, have been carrying a collapsible ballistic plate, a set of gloves capable of handling a knife, and a torch which I can defend myself with. And I've carried that for a very long time in town, not just now, for about 3 or 4 years.
It's interesting that you should say that, because what I found myself wondering whether we could talk about on air, not just with experts such as yourself, but also with people who are called ordinary members of the public,
yeah,
is as follows. If you were allowed to carry arms, would you? And in your case, the obvious answer is yes.
100% yes. You know, I've been trained to carry arms. I've carried arms covertly in other countries for the Crown. It's something that I'm very used to doing, and I've done for a number of years in other countries. I've carried covertly. You know, and I think that if as a registered veteran, I was to be given an ID card and the police knew what I had, and I was to log in and out and let them know when I was carrying and when I was in town and when I wasn't in town, I don't see why any reason on earth why you wouldn't want somebody like myself on the street with a weapon on my hip that could be pulled at a moment's notice.
Mm. You sound to me as though you are better prepared than some of the heroic police officers who were first on the scene.
You would like to think, I probably was in terms of what I was carrying, better prepared, but, you know, I wasn't there. And those police officers were exactly what you said, heroic, you know. Mm. And when you do get caught in something like this, you have to deal with the cards you've been dealt and deal with it to the best of your capabilities. And you know, those men need commending, to be honest.
I think people listening, having heard how you do protect yourself, would be interested in, just out of curiosity, really, not with a view to arming themselves, about those techniques of defence, those pieces of machinery that you said you equip yourself with. You said something about a plate.
Yeah, I have a flexible ballistic plate, which basically I carry in the back of my day sack, so that if I have to turn and run, I can put my day sack on, and I have at least a covering of my vital organs on the back of me. And if I have to turn and go forwards, I can use the day sack as a shield, come battering ram to get myself out of somewhere, or to give myself a little bit of protection from fire should something come in.
And the gloves?
The gloves are just Kevlar lined, and so if I have to approach somebody who's got a knife, if I'm backed into a corner and I can get the gloves on, you know, if I have to, or I have to go disarm somebody, you know, I can grab hold of the knife while you're wielding it and I can pull it away from you. You know, and the knife won't go through the gloves.
So you very clearly see eye to eye with the Texas politician who said that if someone tried to do something similar in Texas, and I dare say this probably applies to all American states, they wouldn't have got very far.
I wouldn't have thought so. You know, there are a lot of people that covert carry, so long as the state permits them. It's quite tightly controlled. You know, you have to have background checks and all that sort of stuff. And like I say, I don't see anything wrong with somebody who's served his country. He's known to know how to handle firearms. He's been in a role whereby he's carried covertly before. I don't see any reason. And I think people would feel safer if they knew that there was people out there that can be of use in these situations. And I don't see any reason why, you know, I've been allowed to do it in other countries for the Crown. You know, I've got a proven track record. They know who I am. You know, why shouldn't I be allowed to carry?
Yeah, why shouldn't you be allowed to carry? Because you know what to do with these things.
Exactly.
But I, someone like myself, and of course we are in the vast majority, wouldn't have a clue.
In that case, you shouldn't be allowed to carry. And if you don't want to carry, you shouldn't be carrying. You know, and even if you did want to carry, if you're not experienced and you don't know what you're doing, you know, the chances are the thing's going to get taken off you or you're not going to use it correctly. You know, even to the point that, you know, anybody who carries should at least be given a training course or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with the vast majority of people who aren't trained and don't know what they're doing shouldn't be carrying unless they've been verified, vetted and otherwise tested to the limits to see that they know what they're doing. But if you are in the category of people that can and know what they're doing and have been vetted, then you should be carrying. as far as they're not you should not you have the choice, you should be caring for the protection of other people.
Am I right in thinking that you've been on the record as saying that the time has come to introduce some form of internment to this country, or have I muddled you up with some?
No, I've quite clearly stated that if these people have shown any intent whatsoever of being subversive towards this nation, and that might be you've been identified online, you've waved a flag, you've been picked up at a demonstration, you've been seen doing this subversive stuff or preaching, you've been taught, you know, or we know that you've been in and out of the country to these various different places, we want you in for questioning. And if it turns out that you have been conducting subversive operations, you have to go away. You have to be removed from the problem. And if you hail from this country, you need to be locked up and segregated from other people so that you can't keep stirring the hatred pot. And if you do come from this country, you need removing from this country. If you don't come from this country, sorry, you need removing from this country. And to go back to wherever you came from, because you're not required here.
Okay. A lot of people will be nodding along with the broad sentiment that you have there, but there are practical issues involved, aren't there, of course, which is manpower and money and resources. If it's true, one figure I saw, that there are 23,000 people who the police and security services have some kind of a concern about. 23,000 people is an awful lot of people. We're going to need camps.
We are going to need to. You know, we've got plenty of empty barracks and that sort of stuff. But you know, 23,000 people is an awful lot of people to be worried about. One person dead, you know, or one person's parents that you've got to go and look at and say, we knew this person was here. We had a suspicion about him. We're very sorry, your son, child, you know, daughter, whatever is dead now. It's not on. You have to do something about it. You cannot keep just bringing up excuses like there's no money, there's no this, there's no that. You have to do something about it. You have to be clearly seen to at least be doing something about it as a deterrent to the others that want to pick up arms or pick up anything and attack people. It's not even arms now, it's cars and anything they can get their hands on.
OK, we're talking with Phil Campion, a former SAS trooper and security consultant. This is Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes on Talk Radio. The threat level was reduced, Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, from critical to severe. Was that done too quickly? But before you comment on that, how do you interpret that exactly in real terms? That
in
reduction
terms,
in the threat level?
If the threat level how it was meant that we had actually got to the part when the military were in aid of the civil powers and that we actually had soldiers on the streets overtly as soldiers, parachute regiment berries were seen, guardsmen berries were seen alongside policemen on the streets. So that was the very highest that we could go. That was, I think they call it critical or something like that. So that was where we were. And then they reduced it again. Now, they reduced it within a couple of days, and I think that was wrong. I think it should have stayed up. These people know that we've got the elections going on. They know there's all sorts going on. There's this Brexit thing going on 11 days after the elections. We're at a point where anything can affect the flow of movement at the moment as the normal goings on to this country. Now, rightly so, these elections and things have to go on because we're a democratic country. You know, people have the freedom of all this sort of stuff. But, you know, at the same time, you have to try and do something about it. So if it had been me, I'd have said, right, we're at critical all the way through this. And once people have sorted themselves out and the election's been and gone and all the rest of it, then we'll sit down and then we'll decide what we're going to do properly. But for now, no, we're going to take no chances. We're going to cut everything off. You know, we're going to get all these people on social media. We're going to really, really screw the nut down tight on people. And then once this is all over, we'll let it off slowly and see if we can bring this down to a steady halt and try and do things properly. But no, I think they're just, I don't know. I don't know why this situation would have gone down. And as it proved, it was the wrong decision because, you know, within days, people back on the streets, you know, doing stuff. And now today I've seen, you know, a vehicle checkpoint on Blackfriars Bridge, you know, policemen handing out leaflets. We're doing something about this. It's good to see, don't get me wrong, but it's a little bit, you know, shutting the gate after the horse has bolted for me, do you know what I mean?
Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Nope, any time.
Phil Campion, a former SAS trooper and security consultant. This is Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes this afternoon. Normally we go round the houses as far away as possible from what tends to be the top story, as it's called, of the day. But the significance and the importance of what is now our second major terrorist attack in less than two weeks, our third in less than 3 months, means that we're going to stay focused on this, and the tenor of the programme is going to reflect the significance and the importance, and for me, the sadness of the story between now and 4 o'clock. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
All the latest election news as soon as it breaks on the station that's going to the country.
The British Open Democratic Process.
Talk Radio.
Have I got PPI?
Want to know if you've had PPI? Find out with our free PPI check.
The team at Stanton Fisher recently claimed back over £4,500 for me. This money was invaluable, as I'd been out of work for a little while, and it gave me some breathing space. I did very little, and I got some money back. It was awesome.
So text CHECK to 80800 for your free PPI check.
Have I got PPI.com?
That's CHECK to 80800.
Julian, Winston Wolf. Your dishwasher caught fire and your kitchen's destroyed.
Yeah.
You need to get to a safe place pronto, or tonight you'll be sleeping with the Fishers over at number 42.
Hello!
Ugh. Relax. If you can't stay in your home after a fire, Direct Line will get you sorted with an emergency hotel within an hour of you telling them. Now get going, Mr. Fisher's approaching.
Emergency hotel sorted within an hour. Can your home insurance do that? Excludes Highlands and Islands. Extreme weather conditions may extend response time. Terms and cover limits apply, underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Imagine this. It's time to change your car. Someone offers to buy it. Great, but only if you buy your new car from them. Ugh. Which means you don't have the freedom to shop around for a better deal. Well, that's what happens when you trade your car in. So why not try selling to WeBuyAnyCar.com? Then you'll be a cash buyer, all footloose and fancy-free, off to try and get a better deal on your next car. Imagine that. Enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Terms and conditions apply. See webuyanycar.com/info.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
The M3 near Winchester remains closed this afternoon. Northbound junctions 10 to 9 following a multi-vehicle accident. The congestion's pretty stable back towards junction 12. The diversion is signed but very busy. Better news or mixed news in Oxford. The Eastern Bypass Road, which has been closed northbound near Horsforth Driftway, has reopened but still very busy. Traffic on both sides of the M42 has been stopped between junctions 1 and 2 near Bromsgrove because of an incident. And a breakdown on the northbound M1's causing some heavy traffic around junction 40 for Ossett and Wakefield. I'm Joanna Adams.
Enjoy new drama tonight on BT TV. Season 3 of AMC's Fear the Walking Dead is exclusive to BT customers.
It's a ride now, at all costs.
TV and satellite, we call it a five-star thrill ride.
Why are you doing this?
Watch Fear the Walking Dead tonight on BT TV, where you'll find top-quality drama, kids' shows and blockbuster movies. Plus, if you want to catch up on Seasons 1 and 2, you can own them now by buying them on the BT TV store. To find out more, visit bt.com/TV. BT TV. Big entertainment, tiny prices.
You'll need BT broadband and a fast enough line. Recording functionality available with selected BT TV packs. Terms apply.
Talk Radio. Listen. Phone. Talk.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
I'll tell you one thing that's been in my mind a lot the last 48 hours, and it comes into my mind from time to time, always, when this country and others are subjected to these kind of attacks. Although we accept that there are some buildings, I'm not going to say the word mosque, I'm not going to say call them mosque, I'm going to say some buildings, some attached organisations where people, young men mainly, can be radicalised. I have the strongest possible suspicion, and I would think you share this suspicion, gentle listener, with me, that much of this so-called radicalisation takes place more on the internet than on anywhere else. And I keep wondering, is it really beyond the capabilities of governments to completely intervene in what the internet provides certain people with? It appears that it cannot. It appears that governments cannot stop the flow of poison and, of course, completely unacceptable levels of pornography and types of pornography and political destabilization. Those are two of the most terrible things that the internet seems to take the lion's share of. And I simply don't understand technically why you can't send government representatives into buildings where people work on these websites that actually form the platforms, as I understand it, on which this kind of information is broadcast, is made available to young people. I simply don't understand it physically. I can't get my head around it. I'm just wondering whether the team who are working on the programme this afternoon might consider an internet expert who can explain to me why this intervention, which is so easy in the case of newspapers, so easy in the case of broadcast television news and radio news, intervention is there. One telephone call, one visit from the authorities, one D-notice if they still exist, one Official Secrets Act, if that still gets used, can be employed on all the entirely responsible forms of journalism and broadcasting, but not the internet. And I simply don't understand why. You can tweet the show. It's at Talk Radio. I've got the screen up. I'm not terribly adroit at using it, but I'm sure you're more adroit than the President of the United States at tweeting. And the switchboard telephone number, if you want to get involved in the conversation with whatever observations are high in your mind, mainly, if not exclusively, about the ongoing investigations into the London Bridge attacks. The number is 03444991000. That's 03444991000. It's Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes on Talk Radio. I mentioned a little while ago that some people have lost their lives as a result of this latest outrage. Some people are fighting for their lives as a result of this outrage. Some people are injured and not in a life-threatening situation. Some people escaped without loss of blood, but they saw what went on. There are people now carrying the most horrific images in their mind, and there are people now who are dealing with emotions that they're really not equipped to deal with, emotions that may range from the guilt that we often hear, survivor's guilt, and just the stark fact that seeing something horrific like this happen in unfolding in front of your very eyes is going to stay with you, is going to haunt you for the rest of your days. I can remember reading after the war in Yugoslavia that this country dispatched 60 councillors to the area to help people deal with what they had seen, heard and experienced. And I remember saying to an older person, you know what, during the Second World War and after the Second World War, when people in this country had lived with the fact that every night they might be attacked, bombed, killed, how much psychological counselling and assistance in that regard was given to people during and after the Second World War? And they said absolutely none whatsoever. We didn't even thought about it. We just think about it. We just stayed calm and carried on, you know, that one. I do hope that those who survived this attack, those who witnessed this particular sequence of attacks, and indeed those who were close to what happened in Manchester and Westminster Bridge, are being looked after as well as we now know people should be looked after. It's Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes on Talk Radio. It's very close to 1:30. Let's get the very latest news. No, we haven't got the latest news. What I'll do is I'll remind you how you can contact the programme. 03444991000 is our telephone number. You can text. Text TALK and your message to 87222. That will cost you, but only 25 pence. Or you can tweet at Talk Radio. Spot on 1:30. News time with Victoria Bourne.
Talk Radio.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn has called on Theresa May to quit over police cuts in the wake of Saturday's terror attack in London, which saw seven people killed. But the Prime Minister has denied policing on the cheap, as fighting terror has become the focus of the general election campaign. Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cressida Dick says she doesn't think arming every officer is sensible or a practical option.
Those people who've carried out this attack want to change our society forever. I don't think we want armed to the police officers or military standing on all our street corners as an example. But I appreciate people who've been affected here will have questions and we will be looking at that.
Police say they know the identities of all three attackers. A possible Irish link is being investigated after it emerged one of them had lived in the Republic. There's also been a series of fresh raids in East London and a number of people arrested in connection with the killings. 36 people remain in hospital. The Sunday Times City editor Oliver Shires told Talk Radio he was working late nearby on Saturday night and his office was put on lockdown.
We had a few reporters who were out and about already who got on the scene within kind of 5 minutes, and we had our chief sub-editor Ian Horn actually got clipped by the van as it went over the bridge, and he was very lucky, he was almost unscathed and he filed a report straight away.
And 2 weeks on from the Manchester bombing, hundreds of people have attended the first funeral for one of the victims. Friends and family of 14-year-old Ailey MacLeod have gathered on Barr in the Western Isles, where businesses have closed as a mark of respect. The weather, a wet afternoon for many, with rain spreading eastwards, highs of 19 degrees. It's more in half an hour.
Election Night Live with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio. This Thursday night from 10.
Join me, Julia Hartley Brewer, for instant results, breaking news and expert analysis as the votes are counted.
The factions, the fury, the fallout.
Order.
Get knockout election coverage that packs a political punch from Talk Radio's Instrument of Power.
The rumours are completely unfounded. There's no cause for alarm.
Election Night Live with Julia Hartley Brewer. Julia Hartley Brewer.
Going to the country.
On June the 8th from 10 p.m. on Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Yeah, we were talking just before the 1:30 news about the fact that so many people who witnessed this, and indeed so many people who may not have actually witnessed the latest attack, but were able to play it out in their mind, which is something that I'm sure you, dear listener, have done. Trying to get a picture of exactly what happened in between the van mounting the pavement and the perpetrators being shot dead by police, trying to imagine what happened. That information will be made available to us in great detail, I suspect, as is always the case, but not in these early days when there are so many other more important things to do than furnish us with the knowledge of what's going on. Richard Angel is one of many who saw what happened that evening. This is what he had to say.
So in the middle of this brilliant city, a group of us are having dinner in Borough Market. We're at the table nearest the door and suddenly becomes incredibly aware that they're telling us to lock the door and duck and cover. And of course, panic ensued, as I'm sure you can imagine. People went to the back of the restaurant as quickly as they could. We tried to get people upstairs and out of the way. I saw somebody opposite, at the restaurant opposite, throw a table. It was unclear at that point what at, but it was clearly at one of these attackers. What a heroic act from that man who put his safety above all of ours. Then, a few moments later, a guy walks out of the restaurant next to us and is absolutely covered in blood, holding his upper chest or his neck, and has clearly been really badly injured, and kind of staggers and meanders across the street, and I think hopefully got some assistance pretty quickly.
Did you know if that particular person was...
I don't know anything about what's happened to him, I'm afraid. He went out of sight very, very quickly in the kind of rabbit warren that is the wonderful Borough Market. We then tried to make sure that where we were was safe. We had a pregnant lady with us who needed a seat, she needed some water, and she needed a bit more calm than we could probably provide. The panic meant that somebody wanted to go out the fire escape, which a friend and I thought was a very bad idea. We were going out into the unknown while the police were still sweeping the area to try and ascertain what had actually happened was definitely not the right way to do it.
So the police you're describing must have arrived pretty quickly because
it was phenomenal. I mean, these people run at danger and they did so with a level of professionalism that is second to none. They did a sweep of the area, some gunshots went off that I'm pretty sure were from the police's side. They swept the area again and a third time, more gunshots went off. And once they'd done that, they seemed to establish that the thing they wanted then to do was move us. So they wanted us to get in single file and then get out pretty quick. They then got us to speed up. We went past people who dropped their shoes, their wallets. There was blood on the street. There was bits of clothing. There was panicked people. There was paramedics doing their job. There was police who were looking in all different directions, having to carry people who'd had a really good night out in London but had probably had one or two too many. And then we got out of the area to what we thought was safety, regrouped, and then they told us to move again. And God, the horror of thinking you were safe and then telling you weren't and moving the perimeter was pretty... That's when it started to dawn on you, the kind of event you'd just been part of.
Richard Angel, one of many who witnessed some of what happened on Saturday night, eloquent and perceptive in everything that he said, although he, I'm sure, would be happy to be corrected that what he meant was the chap with the table was putting their safety ahead of his safety. But that's an easy mistake to make, and not necessarily indicative of someone in shock. But how could you not be? Which is one of the many aspects of this that we will actually return to. The sheer medical consequences, psychological, mental consequences for people who have witnessed or been affected by something like this. Now, following the attack, all of the major parties, excluding UKIP, chose to suspend their national campaigns for the general election. Theresa May said outside Downing Street yesterday that the general election will go ahead as normal on Thursday. And in the very same speech, she announced policies including heightened scrutiny of online services, which again is something that we must look into further. Jeremy Corbyn also made a speech last night criticising the Tories of trying to, quote, protect the public on the cheap, unquote. Tim Farron also spent his day doing media interviews. So I suppose one key question is, was campaigning really suspended yesterday? On the line is Kate Proctor, political correspondent for the Evening Standard. How would you judge that one, Kate?
Hi. Yeah, I think it was clear in the morning that an agreement had been reached between the parties. And the Liberal Democrats, for example, phrased it in quite a woolly way and said they'd stopped campaigning for some time, for a short amount of time. Whereas I think the understanding was really that it should have been through till Monday morning. So I think it is clear that things were breached. I mean, I don't think the Conservatives did. Theresa May made her speech, and she did that in her role as Prime Minister. I think it's the other parties, really, that were a little bit... Well, I guess they pushed it as far as they could.
Mm. Do you suppose, or maybe you know, whether there is any level of contact between the major political parties with a general election 4 days ago, yeah, given something as extraordinary as this?
Yeah, they certainly, they will have been speaking. I think Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn spoke several times overnight when the attack happened, and they certainly did after Manchester.
How does that work? I'm fascinated. We all are. Have they got each other's mobile number?
I don't think they've got each other's mobiles, but I think their top people will right. be in very close contact. You know, we're able to get in contact with each other, the press and Corbyn and May's team. So I'm sure it's not difficult at all for them to call each other. And they would have spoken on the phone.
Mm. Sorry, it's just a complete aside this. All the top Premier League football managers have got each other's mobile phone numbers because they often have to text other managers and apologise for something that's been misrepresented in the press. And
yeah, I really don't think that happens in politics. No. Not at this level. I don't think they've got each other's they've got each other on the text.
And presumably part of the time that it was down tools as far as all out campaigning goes, politicians have to remain politicians, and they were wondering how they could, and I'm not going to say exploit or benefit from the terrible events of Saturday night, but they will have been thinking about what exact position to take, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Theresa May's strongest campaigning rhetoric for her is on security, and I think it's Jeremy Corbyn's weakest. So I think for Corbyn's side, this would have been something that, you know, they'll have been really worried about how they can once again show that they're a party who can take security seriously and would make all those quite hard and difficult decisions that Theresa May seems to, you know, say that she'd make with such ease. You know, things like shoot to kill, these are all the policies that sort of need ironing out, really, in voters' minds. And what I would say about Labour is Jeremy Corbyn made a speech in Carlisle. That's the speech he's accused of breaking the electoral pact that they had not to do any campaigning. He made a speech in Carlisle. There was 50 invited guests. There was 100 people outside, and he had a minute's silence. And it was well into the evening. And I think he has perhaps broken the rules. I think he has, but I think he did try to at least assemble that meeting in a relatively respectful way. And I think this is such a huge issue that I think he hasn't been able to resist trying to put his views out on it.
Mm. Do you suppose Theresa May was somewhat hamstrung by the fact that besides trying to be the focal point of an election campaign, she was also having to do the job of being the Prime Minister and, for example, attending and chairing COBRA meetings?
I don't think she was hamstrung at all. I think in a time of absolute crisis like that, you look to the Prime Minister and you look for her guidance. And I think she did an extremely good job. She did this after Manchester and she did it again on Sunday, of giving a very powerful speech. And that line, enough is enough, I think will be remembered for quite a long time. So I don't think she was hamstrung. I think the Prime Minister and the Conservative Party got their message across really strongly yesterday.
OK. On a personal ish note, if I may, I came into the great metropolis on a train today and I took every opportunity to ask fellow commuters how they felt and whether their families were concerned about them going into an area, a part of the world that was recently selected for this terrible attack. And I'm going to ask a fellow journalist as well, you know, do your folks worry about you if you find yourself moving around the very centre of London at a time like this?
I think, of course they worry. I think, you know, for my own family, they try not to be too overprotective because this is my job, this is where I work, and thousands of people work in the city centre of London. I think personally for me, I have thought about it quite a lot. I felt a bit anxious. You know, would I pop out to Oxford Street or something after work right now? Would I do that? It has, you know, gone through my head, but I think I'm quite determined to just carry on as I would do anyway.
Okay. One last thing. You can tell me to mind my own business if you want. Do you see George?
Okay, we'll see. What's the question?
Well, do you see George around the office at all?
Do I see George?
The former Chancellor of the Exchequer, your boss.
Yeah. So I work in Westminster, so I don't see him. My colleagues do see him at the Kensington office. He's very present and he's very much there every day.
He's a hands-on editor. Okay. Kate
Proctor. He absolutely is.
Cool. Political correspondent for the Evening Standard. Interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for
that.
This is Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes, who is scheduled to be your host when he returns from his break on Wednesday. In the meantime, a departure from the format that we've enjoyed over the last few days, last week, because events that unfolded on Saturday evening, so soon after the terrible events of Manchester and Westminster Bridge, means that with only 48 hours gone, and indeed so much still to be learned, and we will bring you every piece of information that you're interested in the moment it arrives on our desks. We're staying with Terror, Saturday's events. We'll be talking a little bit later on about the Manchester concert and anything else in that province that occurs to us that you might be interested in, and the other way around. Our telephone number is 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
This June, if you test drive the Qashqai, Juke or X-Trail, Nissan will give you an extra £650 off. That's up to a massive £2,900 on a Qashqai at only 4.99% APR representative. Yes, Nissan will give you money off, just for test driving our best-selling crossover range. I know it sounds unlikely, but that's what it says here in this script. I haven't read it wrong. I'm a properly trained actor. I've done Shakespeare and telly and hundreds of voiceovers. Search Nissan offers if you don't believe me. Nissan. Innovation that excites. Nissan Finance. 4.99%. 9% APR representative. Offer excludes Vizier grade. Subject to status over 18s. Order and register before the 2nd of July from participating dealers only. T's and C's at nissan.co.uk.
Man, that Hypnos bed is comfortable. Time to get up. Work to do. Shower. Tick. Shave. Tick. Dressed. Next question. Time for all-you-can-eat brekkie with the fellas. Bacon, sausages and more bacon. Probably even some beans. Today is a big day. Because you are scaffolders. Whatever your story, this is a great place to start. Premier Inn. Premier You.
Breakfast prices and options may vary. Exclude certain locations.
Fill up with BP Ultimate and get 10 times more per tank. 10 times more per tank. And even 10 times more per tank. Fill up with BP Ultimate and collect 10 times Nectar points to put towards everything from shopping to holidays. Offer ends today. BP. Green lights all the way.
T's and C's apply. See in store or bp.com for details.
Talk Radio. Traffic and travel.
Hampshire's M3 remains closed northbound with severe delays. The closures near Winchester junctions 10 to 9, all following a multi-vehicle accident. The congestion now back to junction 13 for Chandler's Ford. The southbound side does seem to have returned to normal. Better for the M42 near to Bromsgrove. All restrictions junctions 1 to 2 have been lifted and the queues there have quickly cleared. Unfortunately, no change in Cumbria for the A590. That is still blocked in both directions near the Newbury Bridge roundabout for the recovery of an overturned lorry. I'm Jarena Adams.
Enjoy new drama tonight on BT TV. Season 3 of AMC's Fear the Walking Dead is exclusive to BT customers.
It's arrived now, at all costs.
TV and satellite, we call it a five-star thrill ride.
Why are you doing this?
Watch Fear the Walking Dead tonight on BT TV, where you'll find top-quality drama, kids' shows and blockbuster movies. Plus, if you want to catch up on Seasons 1 and 2, you can own them now by buying them on the BT TV store. To find out more, visit bt.com/TV. BT TV. Big entertainment, tiny prices.
You'll need BT broadband and a fast enough line. Recording functionality available with selected BT TV packs. Terms apply.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Saturday evening's attack at London Bridge was the third terrorist incident in the United Kingdom within just over 2 months, following the Westminster Bridge incident in March and the Manchester Arena attack 2 weeks ago. So there are now, of course, a great many questions to be asked and being asked regarding intelligence collecting and security in this country. So we're going to have a word with Dr. David Lowe, a former detective in the anti-terrorist unit and a lecturer at John Moores University in Liverpool. Thank you for your time, Dr. Lowe.
Good afternoon.
Three attacks in as many months. Are you expecting more?
Well, that's why we're at level three, which is where an attack is highly likely. And I think it's just been really sad, you know, that we've had these three attacks in such close proximity as regards time. But there are differences to them. You look at the one in Manchester, that was obviously you could see it was a well-planned, prepared attack that had sophistication. We look at what happened at the weekend. From Tower Bridge there, you know, they've hired a vehicle, driven it into people and gone about with the knife. Now, that's a pretty easy type of attack to plan and carry out. And it fits in with what we've seen over the years, not just in the UK, but obviously within Europe, where, you know, the Al Adnani, he was the chief spokesman for Islamic State. He died last year in a drone attack based in Raqqa. You could see that fatwa was talking about driving vehicles into people, picking up a knife, stabbing someone, and so on. And Ramadan, I don't know why, but at Ramadan, we saw it in Saudi last year with both Medina and Mecca. They target Ramadans, appear to carry out attacks. I mean, I can't explain why, but, you know, we're in Ramadan now. And, you know, those who are inspired by this group are obviously influenced. And unfortunately, the dire consequences that we see with the tragedies.
Mm. There are also some consistencies that are beginning to emerge in terms of the profile of the victims of these attacks. Just as in Paris, if you remember, it was people at a football match followed by people at a rock concert followed by cafe society, young people out taking the kind of entertainment that young people take. And now we have what happened in Manchester and what happened at London Bridge, also suggesting that young people out enjoying themselves, are making themselves vulnerable. Does that accord with your analysis?
I think maybe there might be a bit of coincidence here, but I think if you look at the attacks we've seen from Masuba, Westminster Bridge, and then what we saw here in London, you know, people out and about, I don't think it's just targeting age, it's targeting anybody who is there out and about, who, as you said, who are relaxing, enjoying themselves. And of course, when we do go out, and I'm no different to anyone else, we do relax for a certain part, and, you know, because we're out to enjoy ourselves, that's the whole point. I think it was really sick, targeting that concert at the Manchester Arena, knowing that there are lots of young children, young people there. I think, you know, that really just sort of adds to, well, if you could add to how despicable an act it is, it certainly adds to that.
Are there people connected with the security organisations who are attempting to get into the heads of the people who carry out these atrocities?
what you're saying, the security service is sort of getting into them. Is this what you mean?
The psychology of how someone can come to do something as atrocious as this?
Well, I don't think the security services are. What you're looking at is groups like Islamic State, who are very, very good at influencing individuals over towards their cause and to carry out, eventually to carry out attacks. I think that's where the dilemma is. And I think it's quite right that we start to look again at how internet and communication service providers have a responsibility to help the police and the security services. I think this has been an ongoing problem.
It's beginning to look, a lot of people are saying quietly behind the scenes, it's beginning to look as though we are beginning to confront a problem that is almost too big to solve.
Well, quite clearly, I mean, Crusader Dick came out this morning saying, you know, there are tens of thousands of people who are on a system, but let's look at all the successes that have been over the last few weeks. All the number of attacks that have been prevented over the last 18 months, serious attacks. I think we've got to take that into consideration. And you look at, as I said, the type of attack, both Massoud at Westminster Bridge and the attack that we saw at the weekend. It's relatively easy to plan and to, unfortunately, it's relatively easy to carry out as well. That's a key problem.
How do you interpret the information that we do receive from the police, which we entirely believe that a great many attacks, dangers, have been foiled by the police? How do you interpret what that actually means? Because we don't read about arrests. Are those arrests not being made public? Or do they regard foiling a terrorist attempt differently?
No, I think what happens is, and prior to Westminster, there were a number of reports that were given to the media that, you know, X has been arrested, or then we will see, you know, people convicted in court, but it just didn't grab the headlines. And I think we have that period without an attack that complacency can come in here, and we just took it as read, and it didn't grab our attention. If that's the way it should be, but it would do now, obviously, because we've had these attacks. It's been ongoing, and I think we have to look at what's been successful, and you know, and take it from there.
Given your involvement as a former detective in the anti-terrorist unit, you possibly feel more competent and confident in going out into the world, in going out into Liverpool city centre, for example, this evening, than a great many people would? Or do you yourself find yourself looking over your shoulder?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, as I said before, when I actually go out and about, you know, yes, perhaps I do look, and sometimes a wife gets frustrated with certain seats I want to sit in. But with saying that, I too tend to then relax. I'm, you know, during the football season, I'll go and watch my football team. Yes, we do go to the theatre. We went out the other week. You know, I will go to the cinema. And, of course, we go out to eat and drink. And I think we've got to carry on. And I'd say at the moment, security is at the highest level that we could certainly have.
Well, we must keep our humanity as well as stay close to this unfolding story. So I'm going to have to ask you which team you support.
Oh, well, you know, I have a Liverpool accent, so it's got to be Everton football.
Now, I've got a theory about that. If you're Everton, I bet your dad was.
Yes, I was born one.
Yeah, I've never met an Everton fan whose dad wasn't.
Yeah, it's true. I'm a grandfather as well, so it's straight in the family, you know.
And what about next season? Do you have every confidence? You might be without one or two big players.
Might be, might not be. Ross Barkley wouldn't be a big miss. Lukaku would. I think Ronald Koeman's got a very, very important, or the club has a very important transfer summer coming up. But if they get the right players in, I'm confident at least top five, if not top four. And I'd love to see a trophy, especially from a strong team. It was one last time we actually won a trophy in 95.
Well, at least you've stopped losing your first 12 games and then going unbeaten for 6 months.
That's very true. But last season was just a bit of a stall, sort of November, early December, and then we got back on track again. And then they all went on holiday about 3-4 weeks ago.
All right. Come on, you toffees.
Yes.
Dr. David Lowe, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
OK, you're very welcome.
Dr. David Lowe there, former detective in the anti-terrorist unit and a lecturer at John Moores University in Liverpool. This is Tommy Boyd. in for John Holmes on Talk Radio this afternoon. I have three children, and each of them, I'm not going into details, each of them is very close in their profile to the people who appear to have suffered the most at the hands of the two most recent terrorist attacks that this country has had to endure, and whose profile is very similar to those of the people who were the victims, a great many more, in Paris. Now, what was that, 6 months ago? Something along those lines. And I worry about them because they like to go to concerts and they like to go to sporting events and they like to go out on a Friday and a Saturday night and meet friends and have a few drinks and get a takeaway and whatever. And talking with Dr. David Lowe, it occurred to me that such folk are now getting closer to being one of the targets of the appalling individuals who carry out the kind of terrorist atrocities that we saw on Saturday and that we saw 2 weeks ago in Manchester. And I've been talking to one or two colleagues here at Talk Radio, most of whom actually, I have to say, are also within that umbrella profile. They are mostly young people with disposable income who work hard and therefore enjoy playing reasonably hard. So I've been asking them, what do their folks think about the fact that they go out on a typical Friday or a typical Saturday night to go to the kind of places where we have seen the terrorists? It seems to me, and I'm not an expert, as you, I'm sure, will be the first to notice, I am not an expert, but I do detect a pattern. Dr. David Lowe rejected the notion that a certain type of young British person, in the case of the Paris attacks, obviously young French person, the kind of activities that they do in order to celebrate their culture, celebrate their lifestyle, celebrate their political priorities. Not in a huge way, obviously, you don't go out on a Saturday night to do that, but you represent, it seems to me, just what it is that those terrorists who engage in these kind of activities hold most hostile. So, am I going to ask my children to be particularly careful when they go out on a Friday and Saturday night? If they're going somewhere that's a focal point, such as an arena in Manchester, or a place where tens of thousands of people get together in order to have a nice social time, if they're going somewhere like that, I am going to worry. And I am going to ask them to make sure that they make themselves as safe as possible. That is not giving in to the terrorists in the slightest. I gather we've got somebody who was at the Manchester gig last night. And we'll be talking to them right after the news, which is how we need to do it, because we're rushing straight towards the news right now. A reminder that you can contact Talk Radio and go to air if you would like to. The telephone number is 0344 499 1000, 0344 499 1000, or you can tweet at Talk Radio. And text, if you wish, text TALK, T-A-L-K, obviously, and your message to the following number, 87222. That's 87222. It's very nearly 2 o'clock. The news follows these important commercial messages.
Election 2017.
Join the conversation party.
Yes, of course, at once.
Talk Radio.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
At Selco Builders Warehouse, we've got real deals on a wide range of trade quality building products. In June, we've got cement mixer hire for only £14 ex-VAT for 7 days, insurance included. Now that's a real deal. See selcobw.com for even more real deals and to find your nearest branch.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
These days, there's a better deal to be had online for almost everything. So when it comes to selling our cars, why do we go running back to the last century and trade it in? Why not stay right here and sell your car to WeBuyAnyCar.com? Then use the money to get a better deal on your next car. It's quick, it's easy, and there's a branch near you. Change the way you sell your car. Enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Terms and conditions apply. See webanycar.com/info.
My thing, popping on the Lycra and swallowing the odd insect. I'm into my cycling, you see. We meet every Sunday morning, 7:30 on the dot. We just planned a trip to the Alps, well, the Welsh Alps, so we need a new bike rack. It's got to keep four bikes safe on the roof whilst we plan our tour de Wales in the car underneath.
Sounds like Ben's thing is a roof-mounted four-bike car carrier rack. Find your thing on eBay, the UK's number one online destination for car parts and accessories. eBay. Find your thing.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
Talk Radio.
It's 2 o'clock. It's news time with Victoria Bourne.
Thanks, Tommy. Coming up, campaigns focus on security and Irish ID card found on one of the London attackers.
Talk Radio.
After the third terror attack in the UK in 3 months, Labour and the Conservatives have criticised each other over police and security. Jeremy Corbyn has backed calls for the Prime Minister to resign, saying Thursday's election is the best time to address the issue of cuts. Here's the Labour leader.
The government has been warned repeatedly about police cuts, and the Police Federation and many others have. 20,000 have gone down over the past 7 years. We're saying we'd put 10,000 back immediately and also increase the number of security officers that are available, because clearly intelligence is a very important part of this.
Theresa May has defended her record on policing while accusing Mr Corbyn of opposing anti-terror measures. Metropolitan Police Commander Mac Shishti has called for more to be done to tackle extremism.
We've had 3 attacks across the UK in 3 months, which requires a step change, a different direction and a different movement to counter the scourge of terrorism, extremism and hatred that we have in our neighbourhoods and in our communities at present.
7 people were killed in Saturday's attack in the London Bridge and Borough Market area. 21 of the people injured are still in a critical condition. 8 of them are at King's College Hospital in South London. Dr Malcolm Tunnicliffe is in charge of the A&E there and has praised staff who came in.
Nurses, junior doctors, consultants, security, porters, and that gave us the ability to respond in an excellent manner. Everyone was very calm, gave patients absolutely excellent care that you would expect on any normal day of the week.
Police say they know the identities of the 3 people behind the attack. It's emerged one of the men had lived in the Republic of Ireland. 11 people are in custody after raids in East London. And hundreds of people have attended the funeral of a 14-year-old girl who was killed in the Manchester attack. Hayley McLeod was from Barrett in the Western Isles, where businesses have closed as a mark of respect.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A wet afternoon for many with rain spreading eastwards, highs of 19 degrees.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Ben Fletcher. Good afternoon. Chelsea winger Eden Hazard is understood to be having an operation on his fractured ankle this afternoon. The Belgian returned to London from the national side's training camp, where he picked up the injury. It's thought Hazard could be out for around 2 months, meaning he could miss the start of the Premier League season. On to rugby, it'll be a completely different-looking British and Irish Lions side for the second match of the tour of New Zealand on Wednesday. Head coach Warren Gatland has made 15 changes for the game against the Blues in Auckland. Live on Talk Sport. Wales hooker Ken Owens has been named captain. Gatland says everyone is on trial for the opening match against the All Blacks. Cricket. In Talk Sport 2's Champions Trophy commentary match, Bangladesh won the toss and are batting first against Australia. Finally, tennis, and world number one Andy Murray's through to the quarterfinals of the French Open. He beat Russian Karen Khachanov in straight sets in the last 16. That's the latest sports news powered by Talk Sport.
Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
If and when any further information is delivered to the public and the press by the police or the authorities in connection with Saturday's attack in London, then obviously we'll stop what we're doing and bring you that straight away as quickly as we can and as quickly as anybody else can. We are, however, this afternoon focusing on all the broad issues that are delivered to us and our thinking because of Saturday's attack, and because it also came so hard on the heels of that atrocious attack in Manchester. There was a big concert at the weekend at the Old Trafford Cricket Ground. It was organised by Ariana Grande and her management following the attack which took place at the end of her concert at the Manchester Arena. And stars such as Miley Cyrus, Take That, and Liam Gallagher joined the singer on the bill. And at the gig was Daryl Morris, who is a presenter for Key 103, which is part of the Bower City Network, as I understand it. Afternoon, Daryl.
Afternoon, Tommy. How are you?
Were you working or playing at this concert?
I was working. I was working and playing, really, to be honest. Yeah. Weren't we all, including the police officers and the security guard? We were all playing. We were all uniting. We were all celebrating this incredible city. Yeah, we did a broadcast from there yesterday from about 4 o'clock till 10 p.m. And it was just magnificent. I mean, I have been a part of and seen and witnessed and been at gigs that have been years in the planning that were less organised and less structured and less flowing than last night. I mean, I'm sure wherever you listened to it or watched it, you'll have seen the sort of constant flow of artists, constant flow of acts and tributes, etc., pouring out of the gig, and it was just magnificent. It was utterly, utterly magnificent. I mean, you do get to, you do in these circumstances, you see the very worst in humanity, as we did on Monday night in Manchester, that fearful Monday night in Manchester, and we see the very worst in humanity as we did on Saturday night in London. But what you get to see in the immediate aftermath and with events like last night is the very best in humanity. It was utterly, utterly beautiful to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, let's stay with that aspect of it, shall we? Because I'm sure you've been to a great many concerts, and each one was unique in certain ways, but each one had a great many things in common with every concert that you go to. I'm guessing that you've never been to a concert quite like this one.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, take away all the emotional element to it, take the context of the reason that it was there away, and you are actually left with, quite simply, one of the biggest gigs ever. I mean, you know, to have some of the names on the lineup that were there last night. I mean, obviously led by Ariana Grande, but then Katy Perry and Justin Bieber and Take That and Robbie and Little Mix and you know, so many that I can't, I've sort of actually, oh, Pharrell Williams, Liam Gallagher stepping up. You know, that in itself actually, you know, makes it really, honestly, one of the biggest gigs to have ever taken place. Really, it's, you know, it's on a sort of live aid scale.
And of course, Manchester was keen to make a statement about itself.
Massively so, massively so. I mean, we spent 2 weeks doing that. Manchester is a place that is bursting with civic pride anyway. You know, it doesn't take an event like Monday, to be honest, for us to recognise and to know our place in the world. And how incredibly proud we are. You know, this is the city of pioneers and progressives, of leaders and learners. You know, this is the city that clothed the world, that led the Industrial Revolution, that from strife and oppression grew the suffragette movement. You know, this is the city that down the road from where I am right now, I'm just at Media City at the moment, down the road from where I am at Manchester University, they're currently working on graphene, which I don't know if you know about graphene, but it's a super thin substance which will make sifting out salt water and purifying salt water accessible to millions upon millions of people in the developing world. I mean, we're talking about a huge, huge development. You know, that's what happens in Manchester. We lead the world.
I'm tempted I'm tempted to say, by way of lightning and humour and everything, that's wonderful for people who really need their water. But I can't imagine the Mancunians that I've ever met will be that bothered, because I haven't met many Mancunians who drank very much water. What I'm saying.
I mean, we have a lot of water in Manchester.
True.
We have a hell of a lot of it.
So, going back to the concert, I need to know. We all need to know. The audience, were there any trepidations that you could detect? Do you suppose that a great many parents or other members of the families of those who were attending the gig will have said to them, please be careful, or something along those lines?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, it would be wrong to deny that was absolutely in the air. You know, some of the people that I spoke to going in were at the gig on that Monday night, that fateful Monday night, and so naturally they would have some reservations. Some of those people, the nature of the gig, the nature of the type of audience that went on that Monday night, a lot of them were going to their first gig, you know, their first ever experience of a big, large-scale concert. Mm. And so imagine having that as your first experience. That's going to leave you with some some trepidation in going back again. And some of the people, obviously, were, even those that weren't necessarily there on Monday night, were concerned for obvious reasons. But on the, in the, with the events of Saturday night as the backdrop, that obviously gave people greater cause for concern, parents who were dropping people off and gig goers. Mm. But a big part of the reason that last night went ahead in the first place was to show our resolve and to give people the opportunity to get back into a concert area, into a big group of people, which should be, is, and can be a safe space for people to live and to laugh and to sing and to cry and to feel emotion and to join together in doing so, as it was last night. And so I think there were certainly some trepidation from some people, but understandably, and you know, we are taking the steps to rebuilding our confidence and rebuilding the confidence of being around big crowds. And I think that's this last night went a long way to doing that. And credit to, I mean, you know, I'm not cynical, but I'm optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic kind of guy. And, you know, there is a part of you that goes, well, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing that for Katy Perry and for Justin Bieber to be up on that stage. But last night, for the first time, really, genuinely, I kind of thought, I don't think these guys are doing it for their own benefit. I think they're here. I think they're here in one instance to support their friend Ariana Grande, a 23-year-old girl who was caught up in a situation that no 23-year-old girl should have to be caught up in, going back to work, getting herself back up on stage, but also there to create that safe space for fans to come back and to sing and to live and to laugh. And it was an incredible show of unity. You know, I've never felt like that the acts, the biggest stars in the world, and the crowd, 50,000 ordinary people, so close, you know, so united, so on the same page.
Quick positioner, Daryl, you'll know what that's about. It's Talk Radio, it's Tommy Boy, talking to Daryl Morris, who is a presenter for Key 103 and at Bower City Network. Daryl was both working and playing at the concert, the Ariana Grande concert, which was attended by, amongst others, Miley Cyrus, Take That, and Liam Gallagher. And Daryl, next question, what was security like?
Security was immense. Security was really, really, really tight. The emergency services, the police force, excuse me, and the security services did an incredible job. The area was pretty much cordoned off in as much as they weren't allowing cars to get through and towards the gig. I don't know whether that was a sort of reactionary response to what happened last night, or whether that was something that was planned before. Or whether that was planned before the events at London Bridge. But either way, it was a smart move. Metrolink in Manchester, the main sort of tram system, were offering free travel to people who had tickets. Also, the taxi service Uber as well were offering offering to donate the takings from trips to and from the area to the British Red Cross. So people sort of came together to try and make it as secure as possible, really, in terms of just making sure that the crowd got in an orderly fashion. The crowds were asked to refrain from bringing a bag, which a lot of them did, to try and just make them more, to be honest with you, I think, to try and make it quicker, because obviously the security searches were increased, and they wanted to try and make it as quick as they possibly could in getting people through. So pretty much everybody that I saw, nobody, I didn't really see anybody with a bag, so everybody adhered to that. Mm. But the police, again, were not only vigilant and not only incredibly well organised in their security efforts, but were also incredibly personable and approachable, and were laughing and singing. There's a clip doing the rounds on the internet today of a police officer joined in a ring with a couple of crowd members, and they're sort of dancing together in a ring together, and you know, that was really the order of the night, to be honest with you. Mm. Were people coming together, and the security services and the police force did an absolutely incredible job.
Yeah, showing that people will have a good time, always have a good time, how to have a good time. Nothing's going to stop them. Was much said on stage about what happened at the arena?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, there was no, you know, I don't think there was any attempt from anybody really to shy away from the reason that we were all there. You know, particularly from Scooter Braun, who is quite famous in his own right as Ariana Grande's manager. He also manages Justin Bieber and Usher and a couple of the other acts that he'd managed to get together to be at that gig last night and many more besides. And he made a very poignant statement and introduced Ariana. I think he sort of stepped up to say the words that Ariana would probably have been a little bit too emotional to say herself, you know, and that was to thank all the people that were involved on Monday night and to pay tribute to those that we lost. And Ariana herself went to visit some of the family members and some of the of those that were lost and some of those that remain unwell in hospital on Friday night. And she spoke of that on stage as well and said that she'd been to see the family of Olivia Campbell, who was a 15-year-old girl who lost her life at the arena that Monday night, and that her mum had sort of said that, you know, it's not your fault, and, you know, don't be upset and don't be emotional, and that Olivia would have wanted to hear the hits, so play the hits. And so I think they tweaked their set list a little bit in light of that, which was quite a funny moment from Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
And you know, again, there's just no point in shying away from what happened. You know, we were there to honour those people by doing what we do.
Yeah. Daryl, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. We're going to, after we've said goodbye to you and good luck, we're going to take a listen to some audio that we have of how Ariana Grande ended the concert. How do you remember it?
I remember it as being one of the most emotional moments I've ever witnessed in my life, to tell you the truth. And, you know, as a, I don't say that flippantly, as a presenter in a broadcaster, I've sort of found myself in obviously lots of high intensity situations, emotional moments. And I think because of my civic pride, I think, and because of how much I adore Manchester and how rooted in Manchester I am, it obviously sort of meant more. It was personal. But it was just incredible. And what an incredible moment of bravery from a 23-year-old girl to get up on stage in front of 50,000 people in the first instance and hundreds of millions, no doubt, watching and listening around the world. And she sang over the rainbow. And it was just a breathtaking bravery and breathtaking emotion.
Thanks very much for everything, especially your time. Thank you, Daryl.
Tommy, thanks a lot. Have a good day, mate.
And you, this is how she did it.
The UK, online and on DAB.
Join the conversation party. Talk Radio. When the McCulloch man mows his lawn with his McCulloch lawnmower, he powers through even the toughest grass with one goal in mind, to finish the job before the match starts. And with his McCulloch lawnmower, he's got the power to get the job done. That's why his mates envy his lawn, as well as his team. Get your McCulloch lawnmower and other garden power tools at good DIY stores nationwide or at McCulloch.com. McCulloch, the power to get the job done.
Man, that Hypnos bed is comfortable. Time to get up, work to do. Shower, tick. Shave, tick. Dressed, next question. Time for all-you-can-eat brekkie with the fellas. Bacon, sausages and more bacon. Probably even some beans. Today is a big day. Because you are scaffolders. Whatever your story, this is a great place to start. Premier Inn. Premier you.
Breakfast prices and options may vary. Exclude certain locations.
My thing? Popping on the Lycra and swallowing the odd insect. I'm into my cycling, you see. We meet every Sunday morning, 7:30 on the dot. We just planned a trip to the Alps, well, the Welsh Alps, so we need a new bike rack. It's got to keep four bikes safe on the roof whilst we plan our Tour de Wales in the car underneath.
Sounds like Ben's thing is a roof-mounted four-bike car carrier rack. Find your thing on eBay, the UK's number one online destination for car parts and accessories. eBay. Find your thing.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Hampshire's M3 remains closed northbound between junctions 10 and 9 near Winchester. This is after a multi-vehicle accident which happened much earlier today. The diversion takes you off at junction 10 and then brings you back on at junction 9. Through Crudgington in Shropshire, both sides of A442 are blocked by an accident. The northbound M6 is heavy through junction 17. There's been an accident there. One lane's closed. And Cumbria's A590 remains blocked in both directions near the Newby Bridge roundabout for the ongoing recovery of a lorry which is overturned. I'm Jarena Adams.
My thing, Guatemalan Cortado. As coffees go, it's pretty lively. Must have smashed out 24 spreadsheets in half an hour. Boom. Which is, funnily enough, what my laptop did when I spilt my Cortado all over it.
Oh, no!
So, I need a new one. 15-inch display, 1 terabyte hard drive, and no big price tag. Refurb it is.
Jake's thing. It's got to be a refurbished laptop from eBay. That's as good as new with 12-month seller warranty. Buy refurbished tech on eBay and save up to 50% versus new. eBay. Find your thing.
Talk Radio. Intelligent, organic entertainment.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're talking about the terrorist attack in London on Saturday, the Manchester event. There have been three major terrorist incidents, atrocities in my vocabulary, in just over 2 months. And with this in mind, one of the many things that are deserving of our best thought is how we should talk about these things to children and younger people, very young people, and how we should communicate this when these events hit the news, especially if, for example, they have mums and dads or older brothers and sisters who are going off to work or play in the centre of anywhere. It doesn't have to be a giant metropolis such as London or Manchester. I think it's reasonable to say that everywhere is on severe stroke critical alert. Let's talk to Sasha Richardson, who is the Director of Family Services at Winston's Wish. Sasha is a registered psychotherapist who's worked with bereaved children, parents and families for a long time, since 1994. Good afternoon, Sasha.
Good afternoon.
It's a very, very broad question I'm going to start with, which is how best can we explain tragic events like this to the very young?
I think the first thing to do is just to say that it is really important that we do have conversations about these events. I think it's completely understandable that some people's natural reaction will be to try and protect children from them. And I think one of the things that is really important to understand is that these days especially, it's almost certain that children and young people will have heard about these events, whether you try to protect them or not, especially with social media. And sometimes, I mean, I've heard of children who find out before parents because it's come up on their mobile phone or a friend has said something about it.
True, yeah.
So if you don't talk about it, then what you're doing is you're leaving children and young people to try and process it and make sense of it themselves. And it's very likely that they may make up things that are are not true, or they may have a confusion, or they may hear things that are not true, which is also likely. So having said that, then each case is going to be very individual, not just in terms of what's happened, but also based on the experience and reaction of a child or young person. You really want to give them the kind of amount of conversation, communication that feels appropriate. It might be obvious that a child is really concerned about it or has lots of questions, but there may be other children where it's important to open the subject up, but you don't necessarily want to go and talk loads and loads if it's not something that's on their mind. So having said that, I can understand that it still feels like a really difficult subject. It's often useful to say something about any difficult or sad or tragic event, to say something that acknowledges it's happened, like, you know, I wonder if you've heard about the fact that there was a bomb that went off in Manchester, or there was an attack in London or something like that, or we've just heard that on the radio, for example. They might have just heard the news in the car. And check out what they've understood about it, or whether they've got any particular questions. I think one of the difficulties these days is that you can see things can be repeated over and over again in so many different places with different accounts. And what would be ideal, I suppose, would be to have a space where you can possibly watch something together. If it's younger children, maybe something like Newsround or something that was specifically aimed at them, or just talk about it with them in a simpler way. I think the key things to put off is that something awful's happened, that we're really upset and sad about it. Maybe some people might be feeling angry as well, of course, so that they understand some of the feelings that happened. So it acknowledges that it's a very, very difficult event. We also need to talk, and this may feel harder when, as you just pointed out, we've had three events in 2 months, but even so, we still need to point out and continue to point out that these events are relatively rare. When you think of the millions and millions of people who live in this country, it's very, 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 very few who are ever caught up in something like this. And one of the reasons that it gets so much coverage is because these are very shocking and rare events. And I think with older children, you might be able to try and have a conversation that puts that into context, you know, where you're much more likely that it's, you know, people are much more likely to die from natural causes than anything like this, and put it in context. I think you were raising a particular thing about if a child might have some anxiety about a parent or going into work or... you know, you're right, some children may feel more anxious. I think particularly if it feels close to them. I mean, with bereaved children who've suffered a family bereavement, it's often the number one concern is that a parent or carer will die. And so it can be really important to talk about that. I think with something that's not so close to home, it's really going to depend on individual children. Some may become anxious about it and think, is that going to happen to us? And some may not. I suspect, with no scientific backing, that something like the Manchester bombing, which so clearly affected children and young people and was at an event that so many would have gone to, a concert, may have caused more anxiety than something that doesn't feel like it's part of their everyday experience so much. In that case, I think it's really trying to, first of all, talk about the things that give a reassuring message, like the fact that, for example, in Manchester, the person who committed the attack died, and that other people who were behind it, the police have arrested, and they're doing everything they can to make sure they arrest everybody who's possibly connected with that, and that would be the same with this London attack as well. And that generally they're very good at keeping us safe from these things, and sadly they can't. There's no way that they can protect us from everybody who tries to carry out one of these acts. I mean, other parts of the conversation that may come up are why would people do this, and That again is going to depend very much on the age of the child and their thinking, but it may well be that they you know, children want to talk and think about good and evil, trying to understand about why people do terrorist things and so on. And I think it's based on your knowledge of your child. You may decide how best to frame those conversations. But a couple of general things that we're saying are that it's better to talk to children about people doing bad things, not being bad people, because the idea of people, they're just being bad people out there, is actually more scary, because is that person in the street, are they a bad person or not? But that people do bad things, and sometimes they do bad things because their mind isn't working in the way that normal people do.
Sasha, thank you for your time. I have to say, it's been most informative. We're hard up against the news, as it happens.
Okay.
So until the next time.
Okay.
Sasha Richardson is the Director of Family Services at Winston's Wish. We were talking with him about the difficulties that some families face with younger children trying to explain something as inexplicable, virtually, frankly, as inexplicable as what has befallen this country three times now in less than 2 months. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for John Holmes. Let's get the 2:30 news now from Victoria Bourne.
Talk Radio.
Labour and the Conservatives are criticising each other's records on policing and security in the wake of Saturday's London terror attack that killed 7 people. Theresa May says Jeremy Corbyn is repeatedly opposed under terror powers, but the Labour leader says the Prime Minister should resign after overseeing cuts to officer numbers. And London's Labour Mayor Sadiq Khan says the capital does not receive enough funding.
It's just a fact that over the last 7 years, we as a city have lost £600 million from our budget. We have had to close police stations, sell police buildings, and we've lost thousands of police staff.
The head of the Met Police has dismissed suggestions that all police officers in London should be armed. On Saturday night, 8 officers fired 50 bullets to stop 3 attackers in Borough Market. Cressida Dick says specialist units are the best way to provide armed support.
I do not believe that arming every one of our officers is a sensible or practical option. Having these highly mobile, highly equipped, highly trained people is the right way to go.
Police say they know the identities of all 3 attackers. Irish police are assisting after an ID card from the Republic was found on one of them. There's also been a series of fresh raids in East London and a number of people arrested in connection with the killings. And the funeral has been held for a 14-year-old girl who died in the Manchester Arena bombing. An Ariana Grande's song was played for Ailey McLeod, who's the first of the 22 victims to be laid to rest. The weather, a wet afternoon for many with rain spreading eastwards, highs of 19 degrees. There's more in half an hour.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. Mid-mornings with Julia Hartley Brewer. Join the Fleet Street firebrand who isn't afraid to shoot from the lip.
I'll be talking about all the biggest stories. If you're talking about them, so are we. But we'll get behind the headlines, talk to the biggest guests and those politicians, just so you don't have to.
Julia Hartley Brewer.
On.
Tomorrow morning from 10.
On Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
One of the many things that it's hard to get your head around with the spate of terrorist atrocities that have happened on the UK mainland over the last 2 months and elsewhere in the UK and in Europe is as follows. It does seem that the internet is playing an enormous part in coordinating the activities of such people and possibly even fueling their radicalisation. Now, I know that there is a very good explanation as to why governments and authorities and international police and security organisations are not simply able to march into the office buildings of those companies that provide the kind of internet platforms that are being abused by these organisations. It's just that I can't get my little head around why that is the case. And I'm sure, dear listener, it's probably the same for you. So let's see whether Rob Pritchard, a cybersecurity expert, can help. Afternoon, Rob. Thank you for your time.
Hi there.
Why can't the police, or indeed the army, you know, the Navy SEALs, simply go into the buildings that are used by the organisations that allow their platforms to be abused in this way and take them down?
So you're talking about Facebook and Google, most predominantly, I guess, maybe Twitter. Well, I think ultimately it's a little bit tricky because, I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but certainly a lot of these companies are American. So most of this content resides in the US, where they have quite, you know, they have their First Amendment. They have constitutional freedom of speech, which protects even hate speech. So, the fact that these companies, to start with, are multinational is very challenging. And again, I'm not, even in the UK, where we don't have a First Amendment equivalent, it's actually, the sort of body of law provides a reasonable amount of protection, as long as you're falling short, perhaps, of direct incitement to violence. So, again, for free speech. So it's quite hard, I think, sometimes to work out what is and isn't illegal content, although I accept, obviously, that lots of the ISIS videos are very, very clearly illegal content, and I think it's just really a technical problem there.
Well, whilst we're there, Rob, thanks for raising that. Let's just talk about that specifically, shall we? ISIS have been posting all sorts of terrible videos on the internet. I have made a point of not looking at them. I think I know somebody who was foolish enough to look at one and will probably never recover from the experience. But how are they actually put on the internet physically? Where does the package of binary code, which is that video, once it's loaded, where is it loaded? Do we know where it's been loaded from? Do we know whose website loaded it? Do we know what individual is attached to that website? And who is it who's, I think the phrase is, hosting such stuff?
So, I mean, I don't know that I can give you answers to all those questions because I'm not a police or an intelligence service doing the investigation into these things, but I can certainly give you some educated guesses.
That would be fantastic.
I think in terms of, you know, they're basically everywhere has internet now. So I expect bits of Syria probably still have a 3G network. So in terms of uploading, or if they go to border countries, border with Turkey, for instance, they could probably get Turkish 3G connections. So in terms of accessing the internet, it probably, even in the middle of a war zone or a civil war, is not as hard as you might think. And then if they are hosting on social media, it's very difficult for companies like Facebook really to block based on location, because there are plenty of legitimate users of Facebook and Twitter in Syria and Turkey.
Is there no paper trail, if you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there probably is. You know, it's there probably is, but it's quite a difficult one to piece together. I'm sure maybe law enforcement or even bits of Facebook or Google might have a bit of a good handle on who is posting this content. But as soon as they stamp them out, they can just re-register under a different username and start posting again. And they'll have supporters all over the world as well. You know, if they've got people who are willing to kill in the name of ISIS in the UK, there'll certainly be people who are willing to post or host social media content.
Okay, so how
like a game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah. How are those who are fighting what is thankfully a losing battle in Syria in particularly and in parts of Iraq, how are they able to get their internet access? I presume it's some sort of dish that they would carry around with themselves rather than a coaxial cable or a fibre optic line?
Possibly. They may use satellite companies, although, I think if you were using a satellite company, it would be somewhat easier for them to be clamped down on. They're generally a little bit wary of using broadcast technology just because it might bring the RAF or the US military down on top of them. So I imagine they'll just use infrastructure they can find, so like a 3G. I'm sure Syria still has functioning mobile phone networks in parts, and certainly near the borders, you'll be able to use the mobile phone networks of other countries. So I think that's probably more likely. And even in cities, there may even be functioning cable, normal internet service providers. I know it sounds amazing to think that in a war zone, but a lot of that war zone is still civilians going about.
So these are people who are topping up.
They can.
Yeah, these are people who are topping up their mobile phone then, or indeed sort of buying a contract to get their data, and they're putting it to this use, and those mobile phone companies are unable to, do anything about it because of the scale of everything that they do, or because it's technically not possible to do. All of those things. This is a huge problem, isn't it, Rob? And we're not edging anywhere closer to being able to cauterise it.
We're not. And I ultimately, I think, again, I'm a sort of security expert. My background isn't, you know, defeating ideologies. But I think the best thing we can do, and what I hope that people like Facebook start doing, is make it much harder for people to host this kind of content. And they need to get better at taking it down because, you know, they're in lawful jurisdictions and this content is illegal. So they need to get smarter and faster at taking it down when it gets put up, and perhaps putting some of their thought into working out if they can detect people trying to post this kind of thing and stop them doing so. So rather than just relying on people flagging it to their attention. But it's a difficult, you know, the internet is pervasive. It's everywhere. Lots of companies are quite small. Even internet service providers aren't very big. And lots of people are reselling the services of others, so you can actually find there's various layers of company that you're trying to work with. And certainly in places like Syria, you know, there's probably not functioning law enforcement, or certainly not law enforcement that's going to cooperate with the UK or America to work with. So it is a very difficult technical challenge, certainly.
Rob, thank you so much for that.
No problem.
Rob Pritchard is a founding cybersecurity expert. It's Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
The life of a van driver, a life of surprises, a life we chose without compromises.
We're a bit different, more than just a van, not all bacon sarnies and right arm tans.
Days unique, sights ever-changing, freedom, flexibility, jobs wide-ranging.
A life on the road, one without strife. We're van drivers, this is our van life.
Live your van life in the new multi-award-winning Toyota ProAce. What van like commercial vehicle of the year 2017? On contract hire at £199 per month. Toyota, always a better way. ProAce Comfort Medium 1.1695 DIN HP. Available on contract hire at £199 per month over 3 years. Initial rental £1,194. Business users over 18 only. Excluding VAT of 20%. Conditions apply.
Say the end of the month comes rolling around, and has been rather a quiet one on the old YouTubing front. But instead of getting to keep that lovely data that you paid for but didn't use, it just disappears. Say, that doesn't seem very fair. But say there was a new mobile company, one that rolls any unused data for you to use next month, next year, or even 3 years later. Well, say hello to Sky Mobile. Sky, believe in better.
You can redeem your data in 1 gigabyte increments. For full terms, go to sky.com/mobile.
This week at TradePoint, when you spend, you save. Spend £50 and we'll give you a £5 off voucher. Or spend £100 and you get a £10 off voucher to spend on your next purchase. Offer ends 18th of June. Vouchers redeemable 19th of June to the 2nd of July. See in-store for more details. Trade only.
TradePoint. Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
There's delays for Hampshire's M3 near Winchester. The northbound carriageway has been closed for some time following a multi-vehicle accident. Now a lane open is past the scene of this, but there's still severe delays on the carriageway and along the diversion. Through Calvedon in Essex, the northbound A12's busy around junction 24, lanes up because of an accident. North of Telford in Shropshire, the A442 through Sleaford's blocked by a jackknife lorry. And a similar problem closing Cumbria's A590 through Newby Bridge. I'm Jarena Adams.
My thing, my abs. They're big on Instagram. Well, they were until I dropped a dumbbell on my phone. Anyway, I need a replacement. 12 megapixel camera for maximum muscle definition. But my budget is lower than my body fat ratio. So, you know what? It's got to be refurb.
Russell's thing. It's clearly a refurbished smartphone from eBay. That's as good as new with 12-month seller warranty. Buy refurbished tech on eBay and save up to 50% versus new. eBay. Find your thing.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We'll bring you any further developments, any further news or announcements from the authorities in connection with Saturday's terrorist atrocity as soon as we are aware of it. And we'll get there as quickly as anybody else. We are talking about the Saturday evening attack at London Bridge and also Manchester and Westminster Bridge prior to that, and the way that the problem appears to be escalating, at least in terms of the number of attacks and the shortening period in between those attacks. And it's led some people, politicians and commentators, to talk about a word which we haven't heard much of in this country for a couple of decades, and the word is internment. Back in the day, there was a thing called Operation Demetrius. It was a British Army operation of mass arrest and imprisonment without trial, which is what internment is. And it was used for a while in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. On the line now is Patrick Corrigan, a spokesperson for Amnesty International, based in Northern Ireland. Our understanding is that Amnesty is entirely opposed to internment. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tommy.
Perhaps you could outline your position on the business of internment.
It's simply that we believe in the rule of law and human rights, and obviously a cornerstone of what we understand to be the justice system and the rule of law in this country is the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. That is, you should not be put away in jail without having charges brought against you, a fair trial and a conviction at the end of that. And the idea of jailing somebody without any of that due process is obviously a derogation away from our human rights obligations, from what we understand to be the rule of law. But I suppose beyond that, one also has to start thinking about, you know, we've talked a lot over the last few weeks about our values and standing by our values. And our values are democracy, human rights and the rule of law and our sense of justice. And so it would be a complete dereliction of that.
Is there any evidence that internment, when it was used in Northern Ireland, brought about a reduction in terrorist activity, or that it played any part in promoting, helping, assisting or otherwise the peace process?
Sadly, really the tale of internment in Northern Ireland was an unmitigated disaster. So not only is it sort of against principles of human rights and the rule of law, it's also certainly the experience in Northern Ireland would suggest utterly counterproductive. What happened here in the early 1970s is that the UK authorities introduced internment. Almost 2,000 people were interned without trial, some for a matter of months, some for years. What happened was that the community's credibility, or the credibility of the justice system in the eyes of large sections of the community in Northern Ireland, was fundamentally undermined. The community was sort of alienated from the state, the sense that the state did not stand for democracy and human rights and the rule of law, but stood for something else instead. And actually, the evidence would suggest it actually sent people into the arms of the IRA. Essentially, internment was the terrorists' best recruiting sergeant because of this sense of distancing between the state and the community at large, the idea that there was a suspect community. And of course, many of the people who were detained without trial, often for very prolonged periods of time, were utterly innocent. And a number of them also not just suffered deprivation of liberty, but under cover of internment, they suffered abuse in prison. In fact, some of them suffered the most vile form of torture. So that meant that in Northern Ireland, it did not address the ill of terrorism. It actually fed the beast.
Mm. Yes. Those who were around at the time, and particularly those who covered the Troubles at the time, will particularly remember dirty protests and hunger strikes.
Yes, I mean, from that sort of process, that period of, you know, thousands in jail without trial, it fed not just disquiet on the streets of Belfast and across Northern Ireland, but also within the prison system. And while internment was sort of got rid of later on in the 70s, even, you know, the authorities accepted that it had been an unmitigated disaster, it had fed the sense of injustice, and that set in. And then further on in the 1970s and into the 80s, yes, the dirty protests, the hunger strikes, and beyond. And that really exacerbated the problem rather than addressing it. And, you know, we very much understand people's sense of, you know, something must be done and searching around for solutions. What we would say is that this idea of internment really isn't one of them. And indeed, I mean, Lord Blair, the former commissioner of the Met, just in recent days, responding to the suggestion that internment might be a good idea, he himself has said that it would be utterly counterproductive. I think in part because, you know, a key aspect of the current counterterrorism strategy in the UK, the idea of intelligence gathering and prevention, it's based on cooperation from members of the community and of course, in the context of the attacks we've seen in the last few weeks, particularly from within the Muslim community. And there certainly have been reports that a number of the attackers in both Manchester and London, that information was shared with the authorities, with the anti-terrorism authorities, by members of that community. And I suppose the concern would be that if that community is turned into, a suspect community, is alienated from the state at large, perhaps that source of information would dry up and the cornerstone of our counter-terrorism strategy would really be knocked away. And that I think that Lord Blair and other security experts in the main recognise that, and they've learnt the lessons of Northern Ireland, and I suppose it would be a danger to go down a road that we already know is to be a failure or dead end in the Northern Ireland experience.
Added to which, do we have anywhere in the United Kingdom that would facilitate internment, mass internment?
Do we have any sort of locations where people would be held?
Yes. What might be considered? As I recall from the Troubles, there were almost purpose-built facilities in Northern Ireland. H Block and Longkesh springs to mind. I don't know if they played a part in that, but those facilities were there for that. If it's true that there are 23,000 people who are on the suspects list as having shown some interest in jihadism, 23,000 people, you're going to need what the South Americans used to do, which was a football... Some South Americans used to do, which is put them in a football stadium.
I mean, it's really unconscionable to think that the UK would go anywhere at all down that road. In Northern Ireland, they repurposed, I think, a former army camp. That's what the Longkesh was, and obviously it became notorious then as the Troubles wore on. They also, at a time, used ships, old Royal Navy ships for detention. And I suppose these have become bywords in Northern Ireland for a sense of injustice and the mistakes that the state made. And so let's not make those mistakes again. There is a way of countering terrorism, and it is based on having the cooperation of the community at large. And I think that, the Ariana Grande concert last night saw people standing in a sense of togetherness, the community, and sort of resolution that we will not let our principles, our values be eroded, be attacked, and we will not give in. And I think it would be giving in is to set aside the cornerstone of the British justice system, and that is the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. So I think we shouldn't start sort of focusing on what the possible infrastructure of internment might be, because it would be a massive, massive mistake and would really set back the battle against terror, not bring us forward.
Great to hear what you have to say, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy.
Patrick Corrigan, spokesperson for Amnesty International. He is based in Northern Ireland, where they have, from their point of view, too much to tell us, the rest of the United Kingdom, about internment, and in Patrick's clearly stated view, why it doesn't work. You're listening to Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for John Holmes. Saturday's terrible events affect and will affect a great many people, whether they are tragically victims or families and friends of victims or survivors or people who are merely eyewitness to what happened. We can hear the shock in their voices as they explain what unfolded in front of them. Sameen spoke to Alex Dibble earlier today.
So I was literally coming from the station towards Borough Market, which is my normal route home. As I was walking through Borough Market, literally I was looking around, everyone's having fun, as you do. It's a really nice place to live. As I'm walking through, I literally heard the word run. I didn't think anything of it at first until I heard this scream. It seemed like a lady, maybe she was 20, I'm not sure, quite a young lady. This scream, and I think the scream literally just said it all, to be honest with you. I'd literally run, like, I just kept running and running. I had to cut through the Borough Market area to get to my house. My hands were shaking, I had my keys in my hand. I opened my front door and I literally, I just went in, ran in. I didn't know what was going on. The first thing that came to my mind was, where's my parents, my elderly parents? They live there as well. They wasn't there. They're currently staying with a friend towards the Waterloo area because they can't cut through here. It's unsafe. I literally opened my door and I literally see, it was like the fear on so many people's faces, literally running through for their lives. I opened my door, tried to usher as many people as I can inside the house. The screams, you know, tourists in my house, you know, not knowing what's going on. This isn't, you know, my heart went out for them because it's the first time they're in the UK. To see that is not a nice thing, but, you know, as a human being, to just witness that, I can't describe to you in words. You hear it on the news, you see it on the television, but to open your door this morning and to see a trail of blood literally everywhere, to see shoes on the floor, to see clothes on the floor, to see bags on the floor, to see blood everywhere is barbaric.
Alex Dibble, someone, one of many who will be affected, sadly, for life by what they witnessed on Saturday. Samin, in fact. Oh, Samin's the person we heard talking. All right, I'm just checking next door. I'm going to get your facts right. Oh, and by the way, I know it's Ariana Grande. Don't know what was the matter with me there. We heard from Sasha Richardson a little bit earlier on in this hour of the programme, a registered psychotherapist, about how these things can impact young children. And I was reminded of the following story, which there are times when we look back and laugh about it in our house, but there are also times when I feel really sad that we didn't explain things better to one very young member of my family. And this is going back quite a long time, further than most people can go back. But in the days, the weeks and days before Winston Churchill passed away, the fact that he was nearing the end of his life became very apparent to the nation, and the nation really held its breath because he was and remains such an enormous hero to people then and people now. And what would happen was that if you were watching television, there would be a news bulletin on the hour, and the newscaster would generally say that Sir Winston Churchill's condition continues to deteriorate, that Winston Churchill's condition is continuing deteriorating, and so forth. And crowds gathered, and as I said, the nation held its breath. The newscaster would always finish the bulletin by saying there'll be another bulletin in an hour. And after 4 or 5 hours of this one day, my very, very young brother ran out of the living room in floods of tears and went upstairs, and we wondered what that was. He seemed to be disproportionately affected by the news that Winston Churchill was soon to meet his maker, of which he said, "I am ready to meet my maker. I'm not sure if my maker is ready to meet me." So we ran upstairs and asked him what the matter was, and he replied like this, and I'll never forget this. This is why we have to be so careful in broadcasting when talking to young children. He said this: "No wonder that poor old man is deteriorating. Every hour they put another bullet in him." And that's a story I've never forgotten, and something that I think we should bear in mind when we in broadcasting, in journalism generally, are talking about extraordinary, difficult-to-believe events such as those that we have been bringing to you since Saturday and since Manchester and since Westminster Bridge. I'm Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes. This is Talk Radio.
Election 2017 on Talk Radio.
The latest breaking news, expert analysis and outspoken opinion.
And I, for one, am proud of that.
Join the conversation party.
Talk Radio.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade goes.
At Selco Builders Warehouse, we've got real deals on a wide range of trade-quality building products. In June, we've got a 10-litre tub of Leyland Tray Brilliant White Super Latex Matte Emulsion for only £13.75 ex-VAT. Now that's a real deal.
See selcobw.com for even more real deals and to find your nearest branch.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the train go.
Hi, I'm here to trade in my trainers.
Trade in your trainers?
Yeah, they're really old. Didn't buy them here. Seen better days, to be honest. I wouldn't get too close. I want to put them towards some lovely new ones.
Sorry, sir, we don't do that.
Really? Vauxhall do? I just got £2,000 for my old banger to put towards a brand new car.
Yes, you can afford a new car. Scrap your old car, and on top of our other great offers, we'll give you £2,000 scrappage to put towards a shiny new Vauxhall. Visit your local retailer or search Vauxhall Scrappage for more information. Trading car registered in your name for at least 90 days. Offer available to individuals and small businesses. UK supplied vehicles only. Exclusions apply. Limited time at participating retailers. Full T's and C's apply.
Lately, you've been thinking about giving Just for Men a go. But you want to know, is it easy? Natural looking. Yes, getting rid of your grey with Just for Men is indeed easy and more natural than, say, a chat with Mum. Yes, Mum, you deserve grandkids. We're working on it. No, Mum, I don't live at the pub. Tough stuff. In comparison, Just for Men remains easy. About 5 minutes and you're back to your natural looking hair colour. Mum, however, is only getting started. Just for Men. Find it in the men's aisle.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A new kind of talk radio. We'll get you talking. Talk Radio.
It's 3 o'clock. Here's the news with Victoria Bourne.
Thanks, Tommy. Coming up, politicians focus on police and security after attack and funeral for Manchester victim.
Talk Radio.
Jeremy Corbyn has back calls for Theresa May to resign as Prime Minister in the wake of the London attack. The Labour leaders hit out at her for presiding over cuts of 20,000 police officers while in the role of Home Secretary. But the PM has defended her record of on policing.
We have protected counter-terrorism policing budgets. We have also provided funding for an increase in the number of armed police officers. Since 2015, we have protected overall police budgets, and that's despite the fact that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party in the House of Commons suggested that police budgets could be cut.
Meanwhile, Theresa May says President Trump was wrong to criticise the Mayor of London for telling Londoners they had no reason to be alarmed after the attack killed 7 people on Saturday. Sadiq Khan has condemned the actions of the terrorists.
I'm angry and furious that these three men are seeking to justify their actions by using the faith that I belong to justify their actions. The ideology they follow is perverse, it is poisonous, and it has no place in Islam.
Police say they know the identity of all three attackers. Irish police say they're assisting officers in London after an ID card found on one of them confirmed he had lived in the Republic. 36 people remain in hospital after the attack on London Bridge and Borough Market. Brian Salcedo was in a pub nearby. He offered to help a policeman who was treating someone on the road.
I was like, "Officer, do you need anything?" He was like, "Mate, this area is unsafe. Get out of it." I was like, "There's more bodies than police officers." He was like, "If you're going to stay, you're staying at your own risk." And I was like, "Okay, I don't care. What do you need?" And he was like, "Okay, if you see anything suspicious, let me know."
Raids have taken place in East London. 11 people are in custody. And the first funeral of a victim of the Manchester arena bombings taking place in Barrow in the Western Isles. Ailey McLeod was among 22 people who died at the Ariana Grande concert a fortnight ago.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A wet afternoon for many with rain spreading eastwards, highs of 19 degrees.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Ben Fletcher. Good afternoon. Chelsea winger Eden Hazard is understood to be having an operation on his fractured ankle today. The Belgian's return to London from the national side's training camp, where he picked up the injury, is thought he could be out for around 2 months, meaning he could miss the start of the new Premier League season. Real Madrid have been heavily linked with him, with Hazard telling Belgian media it would be hard to turn down the Spanish giants. Chelsea legend Ray Wilkins told TalkSport the champions simply have to keep him at Stamford Bridge.
They're a winning club now, and they win often. But if they need, if they want to progress and be one of the top clubs in European football, you cannot afford to be letting Eden Hazard move to one of your biggest rivals.
Tennis, world number one Andy Murray's on court at the French Open. He leads Russian Karen Khachanov by a set to love in the last 16 at Roland Garros. Finally, cricket, and weather permitting, Australia face Bangladesh in the Champions Trophy. It's TalkSport 2's live commentary game from the Oval. That's the latest sports news powered by TalkSport.
Talk Radio.
across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Jake Edwards is from Manchester. We spoke earlier to Daryl Morris, who was at the Manchester concert, the Ariana Grande concert. We spoke to Daryl about his experience of the One Love Manchester event. Jake Edwards was also there and he joins us now. Hey, Jake.
Hello, how are you?
I'm surprisingly well, since you ask. How are you?
Good. I'm good, thank you. I'm all right.
Good. What do you think might be your abiding memory, your flashbulb memory, a year from now of that concert?
I think the thing that will stick with me the most was probably Justin Bieber. When he went on and started singing Love Yourself, everyone in the entire audience just started singing along. Even if they weren't a fan of his, they were just absolutely going for it. It was a captivating performance. Yeah. But everyone that night was absolutely amazing on stage. It was just so amazing to be a part of it and watching it.
It is one of our most delicious experiences, absolute solidarity with a vast number of people, isn't it? And you've experienced it now.
Definitely, and I was so happy that I was able to experience it too.
How come you were there? Were you working or playing? Or both?
I was playing, yes. No, I was working. I was one of the members of staff there that night. There were so many of us on. Mm. And it was just so lovely seeing everyone come together like that. I mean, we only got put on this show. It was such a last-minute thing, the concert. But everyone was more than happy to go along, and everyone pulled together. Everyone did what was required of them, and it just... Mm. And it made such an amazing performance. It made such a great night, a memorable night for everyone.
I think when people go to a rock, pop concert, whatever, they kind of feel and hope as though they are part of the show. But I get the impression that on this particular occasion, they really were almost up there on stage with the artists.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if it wasn't for the audience, the show would not be what it was. There were 50,000 people there or something, wasn't there? And it was seeing everyone. It was the emotion of 50,000 people that made that concert what it was. Mm. It wasn't the pyrotechnics. It wasn't the performers. It was the emotion. When everyone started crying, when Ariana was singing Over the Rainbow, Ariana was singing, was crying as well. Mm. Everyone was crying. Everyone was laughing. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was enjoying themselves, and it just completely helped take a lot of their minds off how horrible the last concert a lot of them attended was.
Mm. And the venue, I'm only familiar with it as a cricket ground. How did they turn it round so that it could be the venue for a significant concert like this? Because it generally just sees, if I may be so bold as to say so, in terms of Lancashire, a very indifferent brand of cricket.
Well, it's amazing how they do it. I've worked a few concerts there now. They've got all it's a huge arena to start off with. They completely pave over the grass in the middle so people can stand on it. And then there's this huge gap between a couple of pavilions, and that's where they build the stage. And that's how they've always done it when they've had a performer there and things. So Rihanna and Beyonce looked exactly like it did at that one. And then because they're so close to Old Trafford as well, the roads in the area are, you know, more than big enough to accommodate everyone walking in and stuff. And it was so nice as well. What I thought was really nice, the local tram network, anyone who had a ticket to the game got a free Metro link trip home. They were able to just get home for free, which I thought was really nice.
Yes. So many strands of Manchester are really pulled together for so many fine reasons on this particular occasion.
They really didn't. It was heartwarming the whole time. Heartwarming.
Yeah, the terrible event that happened at Manchester Arena, which led to this particular concert, happened as the evening ended. And our understanding is that it was as the first concert goers went quickly to leave the concert and get ahead of the crowd and get to their parents' cars or whatever, that what happened. Did you sense that there was anything in the air as this concert ended that recognised what had gone before?
I think one of the things we all noticed, all of us staff members, at least in the area I was. There wasn't anything that definitively said, and now we're finished. It just slowly got quieter and quieter, and people realised, oh, actually, nothing else is going to happen. We may as well head home. But there was more than that as well, I noticed. When people realised it was over and people were going home, I think after the all the broadcasts stopped happening on all the channels and things, and all of the audience started singing Angels by Robbie Williams. Literally all of them, 50,000 people. And it was just it was a really nice feeling of solidarity. It made everyone feel, we've done it, we've made it through a concert. Mm. Nothing horrible happened, and we just all want to sing an amazing song. They also said they all were cheering at Freddie Flintoff, who was in the bar above where I was. So they were all cheering for him as well.
Freddie was there.
He played his cricket there, didn't he?
He
was one of those footballers, one of those with an F. I think it was Flintoff. I think it was.
Now look here.
Loads of people were there. It was wonderful.
Freddie Flintoff is one of the great men and one of the great Lancastrians, I'll have you know. So just be careful, Jake Edwards, there. On the other hand, whilst we're talking about cultural blind spots, and you're quite entitled to have one about sport, I've got something of a cultural blind spot about some of the acts who took part in this concert. For example, I hadn't heard before a couple of weeks ago the name Ariana Grande, and I'm familiar with Justin Bieber. But perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about this evidently gracious young lady, and also just a little bit more about why it was so remarkable that absolutely everybody took to Justin Bieber.
Absolutely. Well, Ariana Grande, from what I remember, I think she was on Nickelodeon. She was on a kids' channel. I think she was on a TV show. It was more my sister's year group than mine. My sister's a few years younger than I was, so I didn't really watch her. But I think my sister watched her when she was on. And after she did a little TV career, she did what most Disney child actors do, and just went completely out of it, out of a shell, into an amazing music career. She's done so many amazing songs and stuff. I think one of the things, I don't know. She's got such a massive fan base. I think she's got the most followers on Instagram. I think it's about 110 million Instagram followers or something. Everyone who's young has at least liked one of her songs. And I think that's what made so many other artists want to come together. And I think it was as much the other artists wanting to be there for Ariana, they wanted to be there for Manchester as well. Manchester is such a musical city. It's such a unique city in its community feeling and how everyone comes together. Anyone who comes to Manchester remembers their trip. And I think it must resonate with all the artists who do concerts here as well. I mean, everyone just wanted to come down.
Mm. And Justin Bieber, he has something of a Marmite effect on people of your generation?
Yeah, I definitely went from not a fan to yes, a fan with his last couple of albums. I think it's sort of, I don't know, everyone, I think you're right, it is a very Marmite effect with him, but you can't deny he knows how to hold a stage. I didn't even realise he could play guitar till last night.
Jake Edwards, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
Jake Edwards was at the concert that occurred to raise money for, and Julia was talking to me a little bit about this in the 30 seconds of off-air time that we get together when you have presenters at a station like Talk Radio who do something called hot seating, see? Because we've got this one kind of like really impressive control centre where the host sits surrounded by screens and microphones and bits of paper and bits of cardboard and things like that. And Julia ends her show. And then I come in about to do what I'm going to do. And we get about 30 seconds to swap. And what Julia said to me is that she felt that it was a shame that not enough money was raised by the Manchester concert. Those were her views. And if you want to talk to her about those views, then you must take that up with her tomorrow. And I am sure that you will get shrift, whether it's short, medium or long shrift, probably short shrift. Then by all means do that. It's what is it now? It's sort of heading towards 3:15. We don't need dead precise time checks in the hollow of the afternoon. It's Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes, and we are looking at as many aspects of Saturday's terrible event and, of course, Manchester and the Westminster Bridge attacks as well as we can do. And it's powerful and important to hear what people who were there on Saturday night saw and get the feeling for how it affected them. This is Kyriakos, who was an eyewitness.
You hear gunshots, they told us to, you know, go down straight away. Literally here, you can hear it. And we were there for about half an hour on the floor, because it was only just around the corner where all the incidents happened. And with another 15, 20 minutes, police come up, told us get away from the doors and everything. 5 more minutes, they told us get out completely, don't basically dilly-dally, and just walk all the way down. We've been escorted. Let's go all the way down Blackfriars.
What were you thinking?
Is it going to be now? Is it going to be, you know, because you don't know. You don't know what's going on when they tell you get down.
When you say, is it going to be now, what do you mean?
Is the bomb going to go off or something like that? Because all these things happen. You know, it doesn't have to be me. It could be the other 100 guests there could be thinking the same thing, you know. But it does put hairs up your spine, you know. Two of my colleagues left before that incident happened. One of the colleagues was with me. He was there down on the floor with me. And a few of the other guys were there. But unfortunately, even before all that, you could see people running. Literally run, you can see people crying and everything and all that lot. Terrible, terrible scene.
And you then, what happened? You got evacuated and you went over to another hotel?
No, no, no. They told us to go down Blackfriars, walking all the way down here. Yeah, and they were escorting us, showing us the way. Yeah, and from there, just try to get home.
There are so many things about the British that are so endearing. And I will not forget Kyriakos saying there, as he was enmired in the memories that he had of this most shocking experience, that the police told him and everyone else to get out and, quote, he said, don't dilly-dally. Don't dilly-dally. Don't dilly-dally. I'm also reminded, having mentioned that a member of my family was quite traumatised by the way in which the news coverage of Winston Churchill's death was misunderstood by him, I think a lot of households will have had a similar experience to this. I was watching The Queen on, I think it was Channel 4 last night. Helen Mirren is just the greatest thing ever, isn't she? And that fellow Sheen, who plays Tony Blair, has got him off to a tee. And there's talent, because he was Brian Clough incarnate as well. But the morning that the news broke across the nation that Princess Diana had been killed in a car crash, my wife and I were still in bed because it was 5:45 on a Sunday morning, and where else would you be? But our two boys were old enough to be allowed to go downstairs and turn on the television and watch the children's programmes, because it was all children's programmes on all the channels. I think they were only 3.5 in whatever year that was. And then suddenly we heard a real scampering up the stairs, and our bedroom door was flung open. And our eldest and our youngest, who I suppose were about 9 and 7, something like that, were standing at the foot of the bed, thoroughly, not particularly distressed or frightened. But anyway, they knew that they were conveying some important news. And we said, what? And they said, Mum, Dad, Lady Diana, she's dead. So we said, oh, dear, oh, dear. Dressing gowns on, downstairs in front of the television, there it all was. And we naturally did our best to explain to our boys what had happened and try and help them get their heads around it. And this is what my eldest son said afterwards. He said, I said, you know, were you upset? Were you frightened? He said, no, Dad. He said, terrible thing to admit, but I was sort of slightly relieved that it was that and not what I first thought it was going to be when they said, we're interrupting this programme to bring you a news flash. And I said, well, what did you think it was? And I have no idea how he came by this thought. He said, I thought that they were going to say that Tony Blair had decided to ban football. And that is exactly what happened. And that has, again, stayed with me as an example of how it is that smaller children, younger people, and indeed perhaps innocent people who are no longer children, can get the wrong end of a stick, misunderstand, and have a different set of priorities and things of importance from us, which is what we in broadcasting try to help everybody with. I hope we do. It's Tommy Boyd in for John Holmes. You're tuned to Talk Radio.
Election 2017 on Talk Radio.
Results, analysis and updates from the campaigning all the way to the final count.
Can I quote you on that?
Join the conversation party
on your election station.
Our fortunes prosper well.
Talk Radio.
1 million is a gargantuan amount, isn't it? If 1 million people stood on each other's shoulders, they'd reach all the way to space. It'd be a bit cold at the top, though. So if I told you over 1 million people have chosen to sell their cars with WeBuyAnyCar.com, you might think, wow, I'm going to give that a go. Gargantuan. I like that word. Why don't you join them? Enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Admin fee may apply. For more information, see WeBuyAnyCar.com/info.
Want to know if you've had PPI? Find out with our free PPI check. Emmanuel received over £2,400 on her Barclaycard.
I had already attempted to claim back PPI, but with no success, so I wasn't hopeful when I first contacted Stanton Fisher. Needless to say, I was pleasantly surprised with the outcome.
So text CHECK to 80800 for your free PPI check.
Have I got PPI.com?
That's CHECK to 80800.
My thing, my abs. They're big on Instagram. Well, they were until I dropped a dumbbell on my phone. Anyway, I need a replacement. 12 megapixel camera for maximum muscle definition. But my budget is lower than my body fat ratio. So, you know what? It's got to be refurb.
Russell's thing. It's clearly a refurbished smartphone from eBay. That's as good as new with 12-month seller warranty. Buy refurbished tech on eBay and save up to 50% versus new. eBay. Find your thing.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
In Cambria, the A590 is blocked in both directions. Very slow traffic there due to an overturned lorry. That's between the A592 and the High Newton Road. Elsewhere in Cheshire, we have one lane closed due to a broken down lorry. That's on the M6 southbound at Junction 21. In Shropshire, the A442 is closed. That's in both directions. Queuing traffic there due to a jackknife lorry. That's between the B5062 and the Shawbirch roundabout. And in the West Midlands, one lane closed. Heavy traffic there due to a broken down car. That's on the M6 northbound between Junction 4A and Junction 5. I'm Sammy Jo Lowe.
Blind mice, wise men, musketeers. The best things come in threes. Like three times the credit on Tesco Mobile's pay-as-you-go triple credit SIM. Top up £10 and we'll turn it into 30. And join before the 25th of June to get an extra 500 club card points. So text triple to 65666 to order your free SIM today. Smile, you're on Tesco Mobile.
Requires active and topped up SIM with club card registration by July 16th. New pay-as-you-go customers only. T's and C's apply. Visit tescomobile.com.
Talk Radio. Talk and entertainment across the nation.
Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Staying with terror in 2017's United Kingdom, former Army Major Chris Hunter has been talking to Jake Yap, who first asked Chris Hunter if he was surprised about the attack.
I think surprised them. You know, I've been working in counterterrorism for 25 years. I'm always surprised, but it doesn't really, given the threat situation at the moment, given the determination of Al-Qaeda and ISIS to carry out attacks, I don't think any of us are truly sort of taken by complete surprise that it's happened.
And it's said that MI5 have been tracking around 500 active plots in this country. I mean, I guess one of them was bound to slip through the net at some point, right?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, we've only got so many resources. And it's not just the United Kingdom. I mean, we've got one of the best, you know, security and intelligence apparatus in the world. And given our size, you know, it's pretty impressive. But, you know, there's around 3,000 persons of interest, as they're called. As you mentioned there, 500 potential plots being monitored. And they're prioritised because there's only so many resources. So, you know, I was asked last night, literally minutes after it happened, do you think it took the security services by surprise? And the answer is, of course it did. If they were expecting it, they would have done something to stop it, you know, but we just don't have the resources.
Yeah. So you talk about resources. Are you saying that you feel that the counterterrorism services are under-resourced?
Yes, is the simple answer. You know, we looked at cuts of 20,000 police officers nationally. You know, the security service itself, MI5, is actually recruiting, but it was always configured towards the Cold War, you know, the you know, spying, the big spy game for the East and the West. It's a very different threat level now, and it's a very different type of threat now, and it takes time to recruit the right people. So, yes, is the simple answer. We are under-resourced, and we need to get more people in the police, in the specialist firearms teams, in the intelligence services, and indeed in the military as well.
And what is the origin of these attacks? Is this coming from ISIS?
Well, certainly the modus operandi is completely consistent with ISIS and with Al-Qaeda. Both of them have online publications. One's called Inspire Magazine, the other, The Book. And both of those online publications for Al-Qaeda and ISIS, respectively, have talked about the use of vehicles to, you know, deliberately ram into groups of pedestrians, and then the use of knife attacks to go and, you know, spread absolute carnage and terror. And, of course, we saw it in London a few weeks ago at Westminster Bridge and the Houses of Parliament. And we saw it in Woolwich as well, when two terrorists murdered fugitive Lee Rigby as well. So it's a typical modus operandi of both groups. And I suspect, you know, very shortly there'll be a statement claiming responsibility by one or the other of those groups.
And what do we do to fight this? I mean, Trump, of course, he dropped bombs, I think, last month. Katie Hopkins this morning was calling for everyone on the watch list to be rounded up and deported. But practically, how do we fight this ideology?
Well, there are a number of ways to do it. And, you know, without sort of sounding defeatist or indeed, you know, remiss, I can't tell you in a short telephone interview how we can actually do it. I can tell you how we do it, you know, but it takes time. It's complex. It's complicated. You've got to separate the support base from the actual terrorists themselves. You've got to attack their funding, their recruiting, their training. You've got to, you know, identify the individuals. You've got to determine which of those you can actually turn and use as agents, and which of those, you know, you need to arrest immediately, which of those, you know, how far you're prepared to go. There's a whole raft of complex issues, and that's just the everyday stuff. You know, we've also got to look at the root causes as well, and that stems back to the Arab-Israeli question. It stems back to our foreign policy and those of our allies and those of our potential enemies around the world. There are so many complex areas. It can be addressed, but it actually requires, first of all, the understanding by the population, and it also requires the buy-in and the support from the population. And we live in a liberal democracy, and people, unfortunately, aren't prepared to, you know, to basically do what it takes across the board. So what do we do if we can't defeat terrorism? We have to look at ways to mitigate it. And that's where most of our sort of country's emphasis takes place, on the disruption of these terrorist incidents.
There's lots of people who, you know, are very unhappy with our foreign spending, you know, our overseas foreign aid budget and stuff. Do you think that things like that actually help to prevent terrorism?
I know firsthand that they do, but they do to a degree, and they do only for so long. You know, when I was in Iraq in 2004, we'd been in Iraq for a year. It was the most technically advanced insurgency we'd ever seen, including the most technically advanced bombs we'd ever seen. By the time I got there, a year into our, you know, occupation there, if you want to call it that. And the point is, you know, I spoke to Iraqis and they said, well, we've been waiting a year now. We expected our country to be like Kuwait by now, and it's still not. And it's the expectations, it's managing those expectations. And it's very, very difficult. I went to South Sudan a few weeks ago. It's the same sort of thing over there. And it's not a case of throwing money at the problem. It's about doing it wisely and intelligently. And it's exactly the same, actually, with our own domestic spending, whether it's, you know, the defence budget or whether it's the NHS budget. It's not always about how much money we throw at the problem. It's how we spend it and how we manage it. And those are the real issues.
I've spoken to people who work for the police, kind of in intelligence there, and they've said that there are some things that are kind of hard to express, but there's an unpalatable truth that a very tiny minority of faith-based schools and mosques in this country are kind of preaching this kind of stuff. They are sowing these seeds, but they find it very hard to say that. And obviously they're very reluctant to tar all mosques and faith schools with that brush.
Sure.
Is that true, do you think?
It is true. You know, I think first and foremost, what we've all got to remember, two major points. One is that Muslims are the victims of more Islamic extremist terror attacks than anybody else in the world. And we've got to bear that in mind. You know, Muslims aren't the enemy. It's the extreme faction within Islam that's the enemy. And the other really sort of key aspect of it is that we need to look at, you know, the number of actual deaths, the people that are actually being killed, and where there are, you know, the reality of the situation, as you said. And there are elements of our society where radicalization is rife, and nothing's being done about it, because actually, you know, the extreme left wing aren't prepared to accept any sort of, you know, possible infringement of civil liberties. Mm. But actually, when you're being blown up by a suicide bomber, or stabbed on a night out in London, or run over by a van, you know, then that's the greatest infringement of any civil liberty. So more has to be done to, you know, to protect us from it, but it's got to be done intelligently, it's got to be done wisely, and it's got to be done in moderation, because the most important aspect is, these people want to divide and conquer. That is their overall strategy. ISIS and Al-Qaeda want to divide the Muslim population, the moderate, the decent human beings, from the rest of, you know, Western society, so that they will eventually rise up because they've got no choice. Mm. And that's what we've got to stop from happening. They're trying to radicalise just as much, you know, as our sort of right wing are trying to do the same.
That was actually going to be sort of my final question, which is, this must be a terrifying time for Muslim people in Britain right now, I would have thought.
It is, yeah, because, you know, as I said, Muslims are, you know, suffer more fatalities from terrorist attacks than any other religion or group of people on earth. And, you know, they are actually decent human beings. I've got many, many friends that I work with in counter-terrorism, friends in the United Kingdom that work for the intelligence services and for the police, that put themselves at tremendous levels of risk, and their families at tremendous levels of risks, to protect us as British human beings, you know, as British British people. And yet, you know, there's a body of people that are trying to vilify them. Let's target the people who are the real terrorists. Let's target the people who are our real enemies, and let's remember who our real friends are as well.
Former Army Major Chris Hunter in conversation there with Talk Radio's Jake Yap. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for John Holmes. It's now 3:30. Let's get the very latest news from Victoria Bourne.
Talk Radio.
Jeremy Corbyn has called on Theresa May to quit over police cuts in the wake of Saturday's terror attack in London. But the Prime Minister has denied policing on the cheap, as fighting terror has become the focus of the general election campaign. Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cressida Dick says she doesn't think arming every officer is a sensible or practical option.
Those people who've carried out this attack want to change our society forever. I don't think we want armed to the police officers or military standing on all our street corners as an example. But I appreciate people who've been affected here will have questions, and we will be looking at that.
18 of the 36 people still in hospital are critically ill after Saturday night's terror attack in London. Seven were killed when three men drove a van at pedestrians on London Bridge before stabbing people enjoying a night out on Borough Market. Renan Marchese works at a tapas restaurant there.
I open the door and I see already in the floor, three people in the floor, like, almost die. A lot of blood and everything, and the people running away, shouting crazy. I actually listen as well, some shot fire.
Police say they know the identities of all three attackers. And 2 weeks on from the Manchester bombing, hundreds of people have attended the first funeral for one of the victims. Friends and family of 14-year-old Ailey MacLeod have gathered on Barrow in the Western Isles, where businesses have closed as a mark of respect. The weather, wet and windy tonight, lows of 10 degrees. Tomorrow, rain in the north and east, a mix of sunny spells and blustery showers elsewhere. Windy with highs of 16. There's more in half an hour.
Delaney, live at Drive on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. It's an A to Z of original afternoon entertainment with the most well-connected man in radio.
Give it some lip.
Big opinions, massive guests, all the top stories. Original afternoon entertainment with me, Sam Delaney. Delaney, live at Drive.
Honk if you're Delaney.
This afternoon from 4.
On Talk Radio, we'll get you talking.
across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Today's seen the general election campaigns get back underway in the wake of Saturday's terrorist atrocity. Theresa May has spoken this morning, as has Jeremy Corbyn. Our colleague Sam Coates, Deputy Political Editor at The Times, joins me now for a word. Afternoon, Sam.
Hello there.
Is it too early to detect whether these events and the way in which the political parties are reacting have affected any of the opinion polls?
Bluntly, it is too early for that because there haven't been any opinion polls taken really since the terrorist attack happened. And really, we were only getting into the thick of the argument, the political argument over who and if any blame should be apportioned as a result of them. We're only getting into that really this lunchtime. So it was quite interesting to see that after the Manchester attacks, what was that, 2 weeks ago or so, there wasn't any huge political shift. If anything, it slightly dented the rise in the Labour share of the vote, but it didn't cause a particular change in the way of the general election. But the very first sort of online forums this morning are suggesting that people are going to think quite hard about security and terror and issues like that as a result of a second terrorist attack during the election campaign. Of course, the third that Britain has experienced this year. So people are generally, the subject of terror is going to rise up the agenda. But I think it would be precipitous. It's too early to say quite which side in this general election is going to benefit and which side is going to hurt as a result of the horrific events on Saturday night.
I imagine it goes without saying that you can't remember a general election anything like this one. Do you suppose, knowing what you know about history, there has ever been a general election anything like this one?
Well, there are two historical precedents. I think it's 19... there was the Guildford bombing in the 70s, and that took place. The IRA bombed a pub in Guildford in Surrey. I think that was 3 or 4 days before polling day. At that time, Harold Wilson and Ted Heath both sent telegrams of condolence to people caught up in the bombings, but it didn't appear to have a big effect on that occasion. By contrast, in 2001, there was a massive terrorist attack in Madrid, coordinated bombings on the train network there, again, just a few days before their general election. That had a huge effect on the general election campaign. The incumbent centre-right leaning party led by Aznar was expected to win the election, but because his administration had taken and kept Spain Spanish troops into Iraq, and there were Spanish troops helping out in the effort, very controversial effort in the Iraq war, that immediately hurt him, and his administration surprisingly lost that election. So terrorist attacks can have an impact on elections, but don't definitely have an impact. So the sort of record is mixed.
What do you think of the reaction so far from the main party leaders?
Well, both sides have kind of reverted to type. Jeremy Corbyn is using this to make an argument both that you should spend more on, in this case, on security and terror and terror measures, and on the police. So that's going back into his comfort zone, and also repeating a well-worn theme of his, which is that we should start rethinking our relationship with countries like Saudi Arabia, which is all very well, but there's no narrowly Saudi Arabian link with this terror attack. Meanwhile, Theresa May has also been pushed on the defensive. She has, for the first time that I can remember, really come under the spotlight for the way that she ran the Home Office for all of those 7 years, when they had to make difficult decisions because the budgets were being cut, police were being the number of police were going down, the number of armed police were going down. And it's been quite noticeable that a number of members of the cabinet, Karen Bradley, for example, the culture secretary, was up this morning on television, really struggling to defend, and in many cases just not even stating, being able to state out loud the fact that armed police went down rather than up over this period. So my sense is that the government are not necessarily handling this terribly well. The Conservatives are not enjoying this debate, even though many people would associate traditional issues of law and order as a strong Tory card. But then again, I think that people will take a step back after the arguments that have gone today, and one of the big things that they will vote on in this election is who makes them safer. So I don't know how it's going to come out in the wash. It feels marginally as if Labour have been more tactically astute, but I'm not sure that will necessarily make a huge difference when it comes to the ballot box on Thursday.
Do you think we at any point came close to postponing the election? Were any conversations had, do you think?
Well, the great big problem is that you can't. The only body that could suspend an election campaign is Parliament, but once the writ has been moved, that means there aren't any MPs to suspend an election. So I think that there is an acceptance in government, an acceptance amongst all the political parties, and indeed an enthusiasm amongst all the political parties for the general election to go ahead on Thursday. So at the moment, it doesn't feel like we're anywhere near that, or that ever really came up in any meaningful form.
No, and I suppose most politicians would quite rightly say that it's important to go business as usual.
Yes, and all campaigns bar UKIP suspended campaigning yesterday, but only for a matter of hours. You could argue that Theresa May was back campaigning when she made her speech outside the steps of Downing Street just before lunch. Jeremy Corbyn was certainly back at it by 7 o'clock last night. You just can't afford, if you're a political leader, to take too long off an election campaign, if there is a massive and horrific event like the one that we saw on Saturday night.
Sam Coates, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Pleasure.
Sam Coates, Deputy Political Editor at The Times. You're tuned to Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd, looking after the John Holmes Show. John is scheduled to be back with you on Wednesday. It's 20 to 4.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Listen. Do you hear that? That's the sound of nothing. Sounds nice, doesn't it? At Ford, we like the sweet sound of nothing too. That's why we now have 0% APR representative across our Ford car range on 3-year Ford options. Visit your nearest participating Ford dealer today. Ford. Go further.
Retail only. Vehicles to be contracted from April the 1st to June the 30th, 2017 and registered between April the 1st and September the 30th, 2017. Finance subject to status. Guarantees may be required. Free post Ford credit. Exclude selected models. Please contact your Ford dealer for more information.
To the McCulloch man, his McCulloch lawnmower is like the finest footballers across Europe coming together to get the job done. And the morning challenge of the tough, unruly grass facing him, that's like the local pub team. Pathetic. He'll cut them down to size long before the midday kickoff. Game over. Get your McCulloch lawnmower and other garden power tools at good DIY stores nationwide or at McCulloch.com. McCulloch, the power to get the job done.
Fill up with BP Ultimate and get 10 times more per tank. 10 times more per tank. And even 10 times more per tank. Fill up with BP Ultimate and collect 10 times Nectar points to put towards everything from shopping to holidays. Offer ends today. BP, green lights all the way.
T's and C's apply. See in-store or bp.com for details.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
In West Yorkshire, we have one lane closed and slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle. That's on the M62 eastbound between Junction 27 and Junction 28. In Greater Manchester, we have one lane closed, slow traffic there due to a broken down car. That's on the M60 anti-clockwise between Junction 17 and Junction 16. In Cheshire, we have one lane closed due to a broken down lorry. That's on the M6 southbound at Junction 21. And in the West Midlands, we have one lane closed, heavy traffic there due to a broken down car. That's on the M6 northbound between Junction 4A and Junction 5. I'm Sammy Jo Lowe.
Gargantuan, megalithic, monumental. Big words for a big deal from Tesco Mobile.
On SIM only, we're giving you a colossal 6 gigabytes of data for a minuscule £13.50 a month, plus 3,000 minutes and 5,000 texts, down from £18 a month. That's a saving of £54. But hurry, this offer ends on the 25th of June. So visit in-store or online today. Smile, you're on Tesco Mobile.
Savings over 12 months. Standard UK landlines and mobiles includes EU roaming. T's and C's apply. Visit tescomobile.com.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Talking terrorism in the United Kingdom in the year 2017. And in the aftermath of the attack on Saturday at London Bridge and Borough Market, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has said that there is a, quote, lack of religious literacy, unquote, among some people who are tackling the terrorist threat. He went on to say, and I quote, they often don't understand the very basic doctrines of the faith that they're dealing with, unquote. And he went on, they cannot put themselves, again, quote, in the shoes of religious believers, end quote. Interesting. On the line to unravel that a little bit for us now is Stephen Evans of the Secular Society. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, good afternoon, hi.
The Secular Society, we all know roughly what you do, but why don't you just give us a quick, you know, thumbnail sketch of yourselves?
Sure. Well, we're simply an organisation that wants to promote secular democracy. So we want a society in which no one is either advantaged or disadvantaged on account of their faith. But what we certainly want to see is policy making that certainly pays no mind to religion, and policy making is made without reference to religion. So basically we're looking for a level playing field. We don't support any particular worldview. We just want to make sure that no one is either disadvantaged or advantaged on account of their faith.
Okay. So then where does the Secular Society begin to unravel or explain to us what the Archbishop of Canterbury said? You don't have to disagree with it. Lack of religious literacy amongst some people.
Well, we often hear this. I'm particularly sceptical when I hear this as a solution to a problem when it's been advocated for by religious leaders or faith enthusiasts. They often say, well, the answer to everything is more religious literacy. It's a very vague term. I'm not sure what he meant by that. But listen, in an era of religious extremism and religiously inspired terrorism that we find ourselves in, I think it's only right that we do try and seek to understand the problem that's before us.
Shall I tell you, if I may,
mm-hmm.
and it's presumptuous of me,
mm-hmm.
but shall I tell you, and you probably thought this yourself, but shall I say out loud what I think confuses and angers a lot of people? And it's this, that it's clear that Islam in general, the mm-hmm. faith of Islam, is a fine, upstanding, invaluable religion. And what a lot of people can't understand is how it can be that a group of radical people can commit unthinkable acts and with their dying words say, as I believe we can quote from Saturday, allegedly, this is for my family, this is for Islam.
Well, actually, I'm not sure I entirely agree with that. I think Justin Welby this morning, I heard him speak this morning, and he was actually right not to trot out the usual platitude that we hear after acts of violence, that it has nothing to do with Islam. The things that we're seeing, the violence that we're experiencing, it actually has a great deal to do with Islam. And I think anybody with any common sense can see that. I think, actually, people get angry and frustrated when politicians seek to pretend otherwise. There's no escaping that the theology plays a part in the Islamist violence that we're seeing across the world. It's an ideology that, you know, promotes the concept of securing salvation through martyrdom. And surely this plays some part in the thinking of the sad, the pathetic individuals that are driven to murder, as you say, innocent people in the name of Allah. And of course, many Muslims will not share this interpretation of Islam. Of course they don't. But it is nevertheless an interpretation of Islam. And I think we do need to accept that. So it's got something to do with Islam. But I'm not sure an improved religious literacy is what we need. I think what we need, it probably is just a little bit more honesty about that.
But Islamic leaders line up over and over again, having placed flowers at the scene of these atrocities, for example, and say, this is not us. This is not our religion at all. This is not the Prophet. This is not the Quran. It's nowhere in any of those things that these things should take place. And this is what I think an awful lot of people, myself included, fail to understand. How a group of apparently reasonably intelligent young people can make this massive misinterpretation of a major religion.
Well, online radicalization is a serious thing. It's something that seriously needs to be looked at. What goes on into grooming people, as you say, who grow up in Western society, they have all the benefits that liberal secular democracy offers them. They have the right to free speech, the right to free expression, and still they somehow can be turned into monsters. So, you know, the things like the PREVENT program, the anti-radicalization program, they need greater funding. We need to get a grip on what drives these people to commit these, these awful acts of terrorism. But you talk about Muslim leaders in the UK, and of course they come out and they condemn mass murder. Well, you know, what else would you expect them to do? And for the most part, Muslims living in the UK are the same as anybody else living in the UK, ordinary, decent people who don't support murder. But there are Islamist clerics around the world that do promote this form of jihad. And they, you know, through the internet, they can talk directly to people who are, for whatever reason, ripe for being groomed into Islamist violence. So there is theology at work here. And this idea that, you know, they're not proper Muslims because they drink or they have sex or they take drugs or whatever. Well, actually, this theology says, well, listen, you haven't been a proper Muslim, but there is a path to heaven. And there is a salvation, and that's through martyrdom. And for some people, that's a very enticing prospect. So, you know, there's no doubt that theology does play a role in the radicalization of these young people. So we need to accept that. So it has got something to do with Islam. And I think if we can be honest about that, that's a very good starting point.
Okay. Are you able to help us? And you may not, and you will be entirely forgiven if you cannot. But are you able to help us understand what is the relationship between the radicalised clerics that you mention, the majority of whom are abroad, but we appear to have had at least one in the United Kingdom, and there may be more, and mainstream Islam?
Well, one thing we need to be careful about doing is confusing Islamic conservatism and perhaps even Islamic, what we'd call extremism, a very kind of conservative interpretations of Islam, with terrorism. The two are very different things. You know, the thing about terrorists, though, they need to be extremists to be terrorists. They need to believe in something so bad that killing or harming other innocent people is worth it. So one thing we need to look at and we need to tackle and we need to confront is conservative Islamic doctrine. We need to look at that. We need to look at what these people are saying, what views they're legitimizing in their local mosques. We know that lots of foreign funding from Qatar, from Saudi Arabia, is coming into British mosques. We know that very intolerant interpretations of Islam are being preached in British mosques, and that creates a climate where people can be radicalized, I think. So we need to stop pretending that Islam is one thing or the other, that it's a religion of peace, that no true Muslim would believe these things. There are many interpretations available of Islam available, and I think we need to look at this in the UK. We need to be a little bit more robust about tackling segregated communities. We need to look at environments where children can grow up not actually meeting children of a different faith or even ethnicity in their local neighborhoods. So, you know, we need to look at Islamic school, and we need to look at the kind of people that are running these mosques, that are running these madrasas, and we need to make sure that children have some way of integrating, and I think the best way they can do that is through our education system. Okay. So we need to make sure that we're not creating, you know, segregated, ghettoized communities, and schooling is an obvious way through that.
Stephen Evans, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Stephen Evans there with his views and those of the secular society. On Saturday night, a great many people were consumed by terror. One eyewitness is Dario.
Basically, I was with my friend Chris behind Borough Market in a pub watching the Champions League, the final. And once the game was finished, we decided to come back at our flat. I was in the crossroad just down there and asked him, where are you going? He said, I'm turning left. I need to go to the bank to get a center line because he lives in Epping, in Essex. I said, okay, I'm turning right because
you were walking, were you?
Yeah. And I said, okay, I'm turning right. I had to go to get the bus for me, the 21. And then I crossed the road and I heard some noise. I turned my head back and I saw a fight. And I thought at the moment it was just a fight between drunk people.
Wait, was this actually on London Bridge, sorry?
Yeah, exactly. Then I saw three officers coming up, fighting with them. I see an officer hit in the chest. I thought he was punched, but then I realised he wasn't.
This was the British Transport Police officer, I suspect, who was stabbed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And who ran towards danger when obviously most people were running away?
Pardon me?
Who was running towards the danger, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, we've got the sirens going. I want to ask you more questions. We're going to let it go past because yet another one of the emergency services in the direction of the cordon here where the police and the media are at the second. There's quite a crowd. So then you thought there was a fight. You saw police officers, you thought being punched.
Yeah, exactly. But then I realised he wasn't because he was sat down in the pavement, touching his chest. So at the moment, actually, my thought was for my friend Chris because he literally passed through the fight. So I was really scared for him. In the meantime, the police arrived quickly.
Is Chris okay now?
Chris okay, yeah. After 15 calls, I saw three bodies on the street. And I pray God, I said, please don't tell me that he's one of them. Then after 15 calls, he called me back and said, oh, I'm safe, I'm in a cab. I saw everything, so I just jumped in a cab straight away. Then after that, Chris is safe. And the police intimate us to get out of the area. I was next to the shot and I heard around 5-6 gunshots.
How did you hear them? Were they single shots or were they groups of shots?
Seems like a group of shots, to be honest. No, like it's like shots and then a gap. There was no gap, like all together.
Okay, so like bursts of...
Yeah, exactly. And then after that it's better to go.
In yourself, and it's a really silly question, but how did you feel when this was all unfolding and you were in the middle of it?
I was totally frozen and I was scared for my friend Chris. I had to say I didn't realise what happened. So I realised everything once I saw the van and once I heard the gunshot. I checked my phone on the internet on BBC News and they were written
where were you?
Pedestrian.
Okay, so but you didn't know that at the time. Where were you when you heard the gunshot?
Next to the shard.
So, but you see, it was quite close to you then?
Well, yeah, 30 seconds away, technically.
And you were worried for your safety?
Of course, yeah. Then after the gunshot, it's okay, I have to go away from here. It's not safe.
That's Dario, who was one of the many eyewitnesses to Saturday's events, who no doubt will be carrying those memories with him through life. It's we're heading towards 4 o'clock. After 4 o'clock, Drive on Talk Radio is brought to you by Sam Delaney. Hey, Sam.
Hi, Tommy. How you doing?
Surprisingly well. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad. Not bad at all. The office where I'm sort of based before I come in here is right up by London Bridge. So a lot of sort of cordons and all sorts to sort of wade through on the way here. Big sort of like very visual reminder of the story we'll obviously be discussing today throughout the show. We've got a reformed militant radical Muslim, a young man who, was once immersed in that sort of horrible culture and was planning on travelling to Libya and all the rest of it, but was rescued effectively by a community project. Which sort of got him involved in other things, turned his attention elsewhere.
What time is that?
He's joined us in the studio in the final hour of the show.
Right.
I think it's the final hour.
It's your final hour of the show.
He'll be coming in and talking about his experiences and perhaps giving us some insight.
Yeah. That's going to be
the mindset of vulnerable young men who fall into this cult. you know, and obviously first-hand experience of how it might be that society could effectively pull those young men away from the attractions of that sort of thing. So that'll be interesting.
That will.
And loads more coverage and all
packed
the latest
program.
News as we get it, yeah.
Plenty more besides. Okay. I've been Tommy Boyd, in for John Holmes. John returns on Wednesday, so unless things change, I have the pleasure of your company tomorrow from 1 o'clock until 4. Stand by for Sam. You're tuned to Talk Radio.
Election 2017 on Talk Radio.
MP or not MP? That is the question.
I still think I was the best candidate.
Join the conversation party. Talk Radio.